Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, welcome to the program, this Thursday evening edition. I didn't think I was going to be here, but I am. I'm here. Let the bells ring out and the banners fly. It's too good to be true, but I'm here. You hold a three cheers and a tiger for me. It's a minute and a half past the hour. I'm Bob. This is the Horn. And this is the Thursday night program. And I guess there's nowhere to start but where we kind of have to start. And you know what that is. What shall we call it? The domestic terrorism that no one will dare call domestic terrorism? I mean, it wasn't any time. The building was still on fire. When the federal government was issuing statements, this is not an act of terrorism. I'm telling you, this is not an act of terrorism. And why not? Well, a white guy's involved. Couldn't possibly be terrorism. It's a white guy, not a Muslim. Only Muslims whose countries sit on top of our oil do terrorism. Right-wing, anti-tax, union-hating the screed writers. Why, that couldn't possibly be a terrorist, even if he is flying a plane into a building. Nah, that's not a terrorist. That's a disgruntled engineer. Somebody explain me something, please. And that's this. All the reporting, and I've tried to follow as much of it as I possibly could today, indicates, and if you go and read his manifesto, you'll see him talking about, I spent my retirement down to zero, and I've been broken on the rack of the government. Jesus, why couldn't this guy just get drunk and sit at the end of the bar and mind his own business? My hope is to wake the American zombies up. The solution is, and frankly it's the only solution, is violence. Between you and me, and I realize the for-profit media doesn't dare say it because somebody might call them the liberal media, and that would make, the Chuck Todd or David Gregory piss themselves in fear. But disgruntled white guy gets in plane, flies it into a building, leaves a suicide note complaining about the IRS and no taxation without representation, calls the American people zombies, and declares that the only solution is violence. I'm just asking. Who's that sound like? I mean, come on. I assume you've read the screed by now. I don't have to read this thing to you. That's one of the glories of doing this program. I can count on you to have done the obligatory reading before the show rolls. So, you've read the screed. What did you think when you read it?
What's the first thing that came to your mind? I know, because it was the first thing that came to mine. Teabagger. Violent homicidal maniacs. It was last night that we were playing the audio of a teabagger at a rally out, I guess, in Washington State. Of some woman with a smile on her face and a crowd of, whoo, yeah, you tell them, sister! White people hooting and hollering when she said that she wants to hang Senator Patty Murray of Washington. That was last night. It was last night when I said that, you know, these people are homicidal maniacs. These teabaggers, these birthers, deathers, tenthers, booger eaters. Now with aircraft. But I still don't have a satisfaction. Despite the government's complaint or protestation of, it was not an act of terrorism, all is clear, you need not worry. He was a white man, and white men do not do terrorism. Shh. White people do terrorism. They're plotting it as we speak. And I'm a white guy. But that's all the teabag movement is a bunch of disaffected, homicidal white people who sat through 8 years of the Bush administration perfectly content while domestic spying, warrantless wiretapping, habeas corpus, rules of civil conduct, the Geneva Conventions, rules against torture were all thrown out the damn window. And the teabaggers sat there with their little underbite sticking up over their upper lip. How about that, Marlene? Ain't beautiful we live in a free, in the land of the free, and George Bush is our president? Black guy becomes president, they lose their flipping minds.
Well, the government's up to take our freedom away. Damn IRS. They're going to tax us to death. Taxed enough already! Whew. Mother McCree.
So despite the fact of telling us that, no, this is not an act of terrorism, this is not a voting accident, I still have a question. How does a guy who's been broken on the rack, the financial rack of the IRS, who's thrown everything I have into this fighting for my freedom, how does that guy still own an airplane? Because it's not like it was one of those the single-wing aircraft with the wings that folded up snugly against itself, like some F-4U Corsair or F-6F Hellcat on the deck of an aircraft carrier in World War II. It won't fit in the suburban garage. And he didn't take off from his residential street. He left from an airport. Owned a home. Had a family in that home. And by the way, set fire to that home before he left it. Went to the airport. And nobody stopped him as he got in his aircraft in the hangar space for which he had to pay more money, taxied it out onto the runway. Oh, this is under the mask. Oh, you're cleared for takeoff. Filed a flight plan. Took off and flew it into the building that houses the IRS office in Austin, Texas, where you go to try to do a workout before they indict your ass. You know, for a crime.
So let's try it a different way, big brother. Why don't you just take your pound of flesh from me and see how it does you?
How did this guy own an airplane? How did this guy own have the wherewithal to keep said airplane. How did this guy fuel that airplane? And we've been doing a little bit of real journalism, unlike the for-profit media today. Horn correspondents, Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, as well as our blogger Texas Betsy, have been hard at it, covering, trying to nail down a couple of angles. Apparently, this patriot was an unregistered voter. Wasn't registered in any of the contiguous counties surrounding the Austin area, including the area in which his residence was listed. Texas Betsy went and checked and was told by the whoever maintains the voter registration, you know, I've been wondering, you're the first person who's checked on his registration. And then Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, who is of inestimable value in this particular, in these sorts of stories, because God knows you cannot count on the for-profit media. This is not a terrorist attack. Repeat, this is not a terrorist attack. Stop soiling your trousers. This is not a terrorist attack. He was a white guy. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, for-profit media. Way to be a guardian of the Fourth Estate there. I hope you didn't strain anything. But Rick Goodner, Horn psychotherapist, did offer a few diagnostic observations. He says, it does indeed appear that the guy was a tax-dodging teabagger, narcissistic and paranoid personality disorder, but was not, this is important, not insane. Because, of course, today if you checked Fox News, as I did, you know, when one of these things happens, I have to go, one, it's the only damn news network I've got, and two, I would have gone there anyway just watching these people wiggle and squirm and tap dance in a desperate attempt to keep from noting the fact of what this guy was. Do you not think that had this guy's name been Umar or Ahmed, that they would have already wouldn't have already had the banners rolling, terror in the homeland, bum 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 bum, Muslims strike in Texas? Of course they would have. But it's a white guy, so they have to go to work on the crazy angle. And that's all you've heard all day long is, well, you know, some people just go a little funny in the head. You know, funny. Ha-ha, crazy. And that's what this guy was. He was just crazy. Sometimes we have crazy people in airplanes. Sometimes crazy people in airplanes do crazy things. All over Fox News. And by the way, when they could tear themselves away long enough to take a break, Fox News ran ads for the teabagger tour.
We told the elected officials in Washington, D.C. to shape up or ship out, and they didn't shape up, so we're crossing the country and we're getting ready to throw them out.
I wish I was lying. Thanks, Fox, for not making things any better. Now, as Rick says, it does indeed appear that he was a tax-dodging teabagger, narcissistic and paranoid personality disorder, but was not insane. He planned on taking his wife and kids out due to them not being able, quote-unquote, not being able to live without him. But as Rick notes, the truth is they would live very well without him, and he didn't want them happy. He thought the FAA messed with his money and the IRS messed with his money, so he used a plane to hit the IRS, in his mind, paying them both back at the same time. Bob, Rick says, this is just the start. He is now the teabagger's undercover hero. I wish I had some... I wish I had some indication that this guy... No, I just wish it hadn't happened. Back up. I wish I had some reason to say, nah, Rick, horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, you're crazy. But he ain't. All over this country tonight, there are teabaggers saying, well, he was only writing what the rest of us feel. Taxed enough already! Now, I'm hearing from David from Maine that the plane was stolen, but I have read all day long that the plane was not stolen, that it belonged to him. Repeatedly. I heard, the head of the police in Austin, Texas, say, let me state this unequivocally to you, the plane was not stolen. Was it a rental job? I don't know. I'm checking the chat room here. Yeah, Austin police chief says the plane was not stolen. And the implication has been that the plane was his. And the guy, again, was not... He set fire to his house, not his apartment, not his timeshare, not his condo, his house. And what a charming little act that was. Well, if I can't live on planet Earth with the evil IRS, I'm going to make sure my wife and daughter can't either. Do not hold your breath waiting for this to be declared an act of domestic terrorism, even though it was. After all, it was directed at a government agency. The manifesto made plain that the act of violence was done with the purpose of rousing the zombie Americans into a revolution. Somebody explain to me, please. Somebody explain to me, please, how that is not terrorism. No fair cheating and saying, Bob, it had a white guy in it, therefore it wasn't terrorism. I've already done that part. This is, more than a little disturbing. Because, among other things, it confirms what we already know. Here and there, little opening salvos. A grinning woman in Washington says she wants to hang a United States senator. A couple of days later, a guy in Texas who wants to rouse up a zombie revolution. He's the word, zombies. This is not your father's America. Oh, no. This is an America poisoned, toxified, driven mad by right-wing hate. And the only thing standing between that and the complete dissolution of our constitutional form of government is a very thin line of people like you and me who refuse to surrender to violence, who refuse to meet violence with violence, who know that there is a better way,
That's a little spooky. This is the horn.
Yeah, to a frustrated old DJ, some of these things are just way too easy. Of course, from the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack, Alison Krauss and Gillian Welch, I'll Fly Away. This is the horn. It's Thursday. I'm sorry that this is the topic, because I had some fun stuff, too. But I think it is at least worth some effort on our part, because no one else will do this. At least no one in the for-profit media. To call this evil bastard out for what he is. A typical, not atypical, not insane, a typical right-wing domestic terrorist. What did I say on the program last night? I believe the words were something along the lines of,
we have a terrorism problem in this country. Or maybe I wrote it. All this stuff runs together. We have a terrorism problem in this country, but Muslims ain't it. You know, it takes me back to almost a week ago, the show on Friday, where we talked about the Action News Team 5 Live iChannel Team investigative recording coverage of Islamville in Tennessee. That resulted in the acts of terroristic vandalism against an Islamic center, the Al-Farouk Islamic Center in Nashville. And I even mentioned a couple of nights ago the nice community effort that's coming together to clean up the vandalism. But let me ask you, for every community in America that has a little pocket of Muslim immigrants, for the most part, the Al-Farouk, the Muslim Islamic Center, for instance, being comprised of Somali immigrants, for every town in America, and there aren't that many, that have something like that, how many disaffected, disconnected, angry white people are there who are sitting around thinking, you know, if I had an airplane, if only I had an airplane. From the last couple of, okay, I will read from this because it does deserve to be read. From the last couple of paragraphs of the manifesto, I know I'm hardly the first one to decide I've had all I can stand. It has always been a myth that people have stopped dying for their freedom in this country. And it isn't limited to the blacks and poor immigrants. You see that? You see that in that one sentence? While the rest of the for-profit media sits there and says, see, well, you know, he said he hated the Catholics and religion. That must mean he's an atheist and he's all liberal. No. Hatred of the Catholic Church, as manifested in this screed, is typical of your average LaRoucher type, as is the hatred of the IRS. Remember, that's what Lyndon LaRouche wound up in prison for, tax stuff. But notice that in this sentence, I know I'm hardly the first one to decide I have had all I can stand. This second sentence, it has always been a myth that people have stopped dying for their freedom in this country, and it isn't limited to the blacks and poor immigrants. See, all them black peoples, all them poor immigrants out there getting all the attention for doing all the dying, and they think, oh, they're fighting for their freedom. He denigrates the sacrifices of people like Martin Luther King Jr. in one fell swoop. He follows. He says, I know there have been countless before me, and there are sure to be as many after. But I also know that by not adding my body to the count, I ensure nothing will change. I choose not to keep looking over my shoulder at Big Brother while he strips my carcass. The egomania of that statement, of course, substitute carcass, strips my carcass for asks me to pay my way via taxation in this country. I choose not to ignore what is going on all around me. You know, one of them's in the White House. I choose not to pretend that business as usual won't continue. I have just had enough. Taxed enough already? I could only hope that the numbers quickly get too big to be whitewashed and ignored, that the American zombies wake up and revolt. It will take nothing less. Zombies? Zombies? I would only hope that by striking a nerve that stimulates the inevitable double-standard knee-jerk government reaction that results in more stupid draconian restrictions, people will wake up and begin to see the pompous political thugs and their mindless minions for what they are. Gee, jackass, where were you in the last 8 years of George W. Bush? I'm sorry, I'm just asking. I'm not saying it would have been right for him to do it then. It wouldn't have been. But where was he? He was just not quite that angry back then. Because everything was okay with the world. Because there was a white man in the White House like there always has been and always should be in his little white world. The cruel joke is that the really big chunks of shit at the top have known this all along and have been laughing at and using this awareness against fools like me all along. No style points. But back up there, that draconian overreaction business. I would only hope that by striking a nerve that stimulates the inevitable double-standard knee-jerk government reaction that results in more stupid Dakota... Well, he was not insane. He was, however, an idiot. Because even as he was sitting in the pilot's seat screaming, "Take that!" as he kamikazed into that building in Austin... This clown thought that they would say it was terrorism, which it was. But by sitting there feeling like a disaffected white man, guess what? He was under the profoundly mistaken impression that he would have been treated as a terrorist. Welcome to white privilege. Can you imagine that? A disaffected, creepy-ass white man flies an airplane into a public building in Austin, Texas. The government doesn't call it terrorism like it is. As loopy as it may sound on my part, please understand, that is a function of white privilege. As a white man, he has the privilege not to be considered a domestic terrorist, even when he is. It's just like the photographs out of New Orleans during Katrina. Black people were, of course, what? What? Right, they were looting. White people were scavenging for food. Got it? But he didn't understand the national security state 10 cents worth. Because with this guy, no, you don't say, no, the government wasn't going to say it was an act of terrorism, even though it was. They're going to say, profoundly disturbed man flew airplane into government bureaucracy building of glorious American state today. He was obviously insane. Just like the Soviet Union used to do. That's what you do with these guys. You don't validate their point by talking about what they're talking about or by responding to it. You go, nah, he's a loony. That's why the for-profit media won't talk about this with any degree of honesty as you and I are. It's a matter of devalidating him. And I guess if you want to say it, it's probably the biggest thumb in the eye that the government that he had come to loathe and hate could have responded with. I'm striking a blow for patriotism. I'm going to wake up the zombie Americans. Oh, God, the zombies are still asleep. It was all in vain. Oh, no.
I am finally ready to stop this insanity. Well, Mr. Big Brother IRS man, let's try something different. Take my pound of flesh and sleep well. Why wouldn't they sleep well? Why wouldn't they? And then he closes with the communist creed, from each according to his ability to each according to his need. Which obviously wouldn't have sat well with him because he didn't want to let go of any of his money. He didn't even want to pay taxes to the very country that provided everything that he had had to that point. I'm not sure exactly which part I got it on, but I just got a note from horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner with a great big bingo. I'm getting kind of good at this, ain't I, Rick? And then finally he says the capitalist creed, from each according to his gullibility to each according to his greed. I'm thinking that's not original. This is, you know what I got to do? I told you that I've been on a Kurt Vonnegut reading binge lately. I ran across a quote today, and when I play the next piece of bumper music, which I'm about to do because this just fits so nicely, I'm going to run and grab it. I got to share this quote with you. It's huge. Yeah, Sue chiming in and saying, yeah, he damn sure didn't mind the rest of us paying our taxes so he'd have some place to land his goddamn plane. But see, that's the point. He was special. The world revolved around him. It was more of the typical white guy narcissism. Oh, there's Rick. Narcissism, that's what he said. Rick Goodner, he said it. Narcissistic. It's not about whether or not the rest of us have a country fit to live in. It's about whether or not he's being taxed enough already. You get it? I do. This guy wasn't crazy. Not even a little bit. And you know what? This guy, I'm sure that there will be the obligatory pseudo-journalistic masturbation over the next few days. The life of, we'll go through, Andrew Stack. He was born a poor white child, and you know how it goes. Do you really believe that he actually ever lived next to a lady in Harrisburg, an octogenarian? I don't. I don't believe it. That is self-serving crap from a man who is and this is, please, this is really, really, really the essence of what all this is about. This is a man whose sense of white privilege is threatened. Now, consider this. There's a lot of dialogue that goes on before the show ever starts about this kind of thing. Our chief staff writer, David in Tennessee, and I exchanged a few thoughts earlier. If one starts a business, David says, they obviously have an extraordinary drive about them. A small percentage of them are consumed by a sense of destiny. If the business is not a complete success, someone or something has wrenched it from them. It can never be admitted that it's their fault. So this guy played fast and loose with the IRS, and he couldn't keep the plates spinning on the sticks. Naturally, that pressure backed out a few more of the screws, and here he went right over the edge.
And again, if it had been an American citizen who happened to be Muslim and a longtime member of the armed forces, that guy goes crazy and starts shooting people. Oh, it's all over Fox News.
He was a terrorist.
Meanwhile, American citizen with insane manifesto protesting oppressive government taxation without representation. And by the way, Lee, you got your $5. $5 says he ain't a registered voter. Well, he wasn't. You win. I'm into you for a nice cold draft next time I'm that way. And health care reform steals plane and crashes in building. That guy's a patriot. Howdy doodles. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Hey, boss, what's up?
Oh, nothing. I just arrived in the lovely town of Princeton. I'm going to a COPE committee meeting. COPE is Committee on Political Education for AFL-CIO.
That's got to be a good thing.
It is a good thing. You know, we figure out who we're going to interview for candidates and who we're going to endorse and try to get people activated and, you know, supporting our candidates and all that good stuff. But before I go in here, I wanted to, have you been watching the, am I saying his name right, Senator Bennett, that initiated the letter to Harry Reid about doing reconciliation for health care?
Yeah, I think you've got the right guy. No, I've been sort of wrapped up in this idiot with his airplane today.
Okay. As of last night, after a show on Rachel Maddow, there were 11 co-signers. And, you know, we're urging everybody to call their senators wherever they are and ask them to co-sign this letter. And, you know, let's get this done. And Bernie Sanders was on Maddow's show last night, and, I mean, he's fired up. He's ready. You know, it's not just reconciliation for health care. It's reconciliation for a jobs bill, you know, just everything. Let's do it. And, you know, like the Democrats got to realize if they go and start this reconciliation, pass health care, and, you know, like Sanders was talking about, too, without the Cadillac tax. I mean, taxing people that already have benefits is a bad idea. All there is to it, you know. I don't care if the president thinks it's a good idea or not. He's wrong. And, you know, with reconciliation, they could pass this with a public option without the Cadillac tax. They could pass a jobs bill, an education bill, and if the Democrats got enough guts to do this, they could turn this election coming up in November around to the possibility that they could gain seats. Because I honestly and truly believe the biggest problem that people have is inaction. I encourage everybody to call their senator, get on board with this thing, and move forward. Let's do something. And if they don't do anything, you know, if they continue the path that they're on now, they stand a chance of, you know, I mean, 5 senators easily, and with the possibility of leaving control of the Senate. And if they lose control of the Senate, then the Republicans will teach them what reconciliation is all about.
I guess that's the point. Haven't they already had that lesson?
One would think so. You know, I don't know. I had an article. I don't know how many times it's been used since, you know, the 80s. And both of the huge tax cuts were passed with reconciliation.
Sure were.
You know, so what's the fear?
So was CHIPS. And, you know, so was S-CHIP, wasn't it?
I believe it was. I believe it was. And it's always referred to as this obscure procedure. It's not very obscure, you know. And, what it is majority rules. That's what it is. And, you know, I'm all for that. So, but like I say, I just want to call to encourage everybody, please call your senator, tell him to get on board with this. And let's get something done here.
Do you think Jay Rockefeller will get on board with it?
I've called his office in Washington, and I was on the phone with his office in Beckley today. And, you know, I mean, all you get from staff members is...
Thank you for calling.
Pass it along. You know, we'll pass it along. And I think, I tend to think there's hope with Rockefeller. I really do. You know, because he shocked me a couple of times during this whole thing. I mean, he's made some pretty bold steps and statements, you know, about health care. So, you know, I think there's a good shot that he will get on board. You know, Byrd's office, I called in D.C., and, you know, it's the same thing. We will pass it on, you know.
Well, have you done anything in the way of running the numbers? Can we, and here's the ultimate question. If we assume we get no Republican votes, which I think is a foregone conclusion.
Yes, it is.
Can we pass, do we have 51 votes if we assume that Ben Bad Toupee Nelson, Mary Landrieu, Blanche Lincoln, who else?
Lieberman.
Well, I'm not counting him as a Democrat. I mean, the way I'm looking at it, there's 100 senators, and two of them are independents, and one of them is Sanders, and one of them is Lieberman. So those two are going to cancel each other.
Exactly.
So the question ultimately on the Democratic side is Ben Nelson, Mary Landrieu, Blanche Lincoln, and I'm trying to think if there's anybody else out there with an ostensible D behind their name who would fight this.
Well, Bly's still there.
Yeah, he
still
is.
Gets the vote.
That's four.
Yep. But remember, too, you know, the ace in the hole is the vice president.
Absolutely. So all we got to have is 50.
50.
If Obama will let him do it.
I kind of think Joe got enough, guts to do it anyway. Obama's got to understand that this is the only way to go. I mean, you're going to stand in the way of 50 senators that are supposedly on your side. You know, I think if they got some guts, it would give him some guts. What do they have to lose? They have absolutely nothing to lose. Nothing. And doing nothing, they have a lot to lose.
And see, you said something about lessons a few minutes ago, Wayne. That's ultimately my question. You say, what do they have to lose? I don't know if they've learned that lesson that they don't. They think that they're governing appropriately. Now, you know, you mentioned by at least.
Terribly wrong.
Pardon?
I said they're terribly wrong.
Oh, very. But Bai came out the other day and said the filibuster is the problem.
Would he get?
Would he get on board?
Yes, he did. Miracles happen, And I mean, you know, the filibuster. Well, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about majority rule when it comes to that. You know,
it seems
to me I read something where Bai was suggesting instead of 60, 55.
Right.
You know.
I mean, I think you know you'll get the vote of Tom Harkin, Dick Durbin, sure.
Well, Harkin's probably signed on to the letter. I can't remember all the...
Yeah, I think he is.
As of last night, there were 11 co-signers to this letter to read.
What about Max Baucus? He hates the public option with a purple passion.
I wouldn't count his vote. He's a Republican.
Okay, so now we're at five. I said, so that puts us at five.
So, well, now we're at what, 54?
Right.
No.
Just a little impromptu vote counting, but.
Right, but, and, you know, which means we could lose three more and have 51 and four more and.
And let Biden do it.
That the vice president will do it.
Yeah, and see, I guess I'm enough of a cynic, Wayne, that I'm trying to sit here thinking, we'll lose Bill Nelson out of Florida. Because he's got an elderly population screaming that a public option will take away their Medicare.
Right.
So that's six.
Yeah, but I mean, it's still, I mean, you know, what are, and I guess it's, you know, I guess it's the ego and the power that keeps them in there. But, I mean, you know, what the hell? It's a millionaire's club. I mean, it's not like if any of these guys lose their election that they're going to miss a meal or they're going to have to pull their kids out of school or anything. I mean, that's, you know. But who was the poorest senator?
Isn't that Bernie?
I think it was Joe Biden.
No, yeah, well, it was. I think it's Bernie now.
Okay, yeah, it may very well be. May very well be. You know, I know that, you know, even when the vice president was a senator, he was the poorest senator, and I would say that Bernie was right next to him.
Well, this is interesting. I'm hearing right now that on National Public Radio today, Evan Bayh said in the 5 p.m. Eastern hour that in regard to cutting cloture back to 55 votes, he said he was so in favor of it, he'd introduce it if no one else did. So
that's very encouraging, but I don't like the 55. We got too many. We're at 55 already, right?
Yeah.
With just the people we were figuring.
Well, I mean, we're down to 53 right now with the way I'm figuring.
Right. Well, exactly. So, you know. But that's for closure. You know, this, I mean, you know, our...
Yeah, right, they're separate issues. I'm just wondering if...
Yes, they are.
I'm just wondering now that if Evan Bayh has said that he's on the way out, that maybe he's going to feel a little bit free riff off of another topic. I'm wondering if he's a dangerous senator now.
I would hope so, and you know... As far as I'm concerned, he owes the party back for what he pulled here, three days ago. I mean, you know, if you want to retire, fine, retire. You know, tell us early enough to, find another candidate.
Right, because as of tomorrow, no individual may file for want of the 500 requisite signatures to get approved.
Exactly. And then that means that the committee will have to, you know, the congressional committee or senatorial committee will have to appoint a candidate. And how long will that take? I think Bayh owes us big time. I mean, you know, I'm not really upset that he's leaving, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, I'm upset at the way he did it, the timing of it. You know, if you're going to quit, you know, tell us 6 months earlier.
But, yeah, no kidding. Yeah, and the original four signatories to the letter were Senators Michael Bennett, Democrat of Colorado, Kirsten Gillibrand, Democrat of New York, Jeff Merkley of Oregon, and Sherrod Brown of Ohio. And so you say that...
Sherrod Brown.
Yeah, I like the guy a lot.
But
educate him a little bit on coal, and he'd just about be perfect.
Exactly. In And like I said, as of last night, there were 11 co-signers. And, you know, hopefully we gained a few more today. You know how to run that computer. You could Google it.
Well, I'm looking right now, as a matter of fact. Hopefully there's an update to the post at... Nope, still no update. But, yeah, with that, it's a start. It's a start. I remember when we got numbers like that to agree to filibuster Samuel Alito.
Yeah. You got to start somewhere, you know.
Well, do we have any idea how much time they have?
Sanders said last night that this could be done quickly. I mean, you know, what the hell, they're going to have... when's Obama's summit with the Republicans, the 25th?
Right.
And if they got time to have that, we got time to do this.
And the fact of the matter is, if he comes out of that summit on the 25th and says, and well, it's not going to be, it's going to be on TV. If we see the Republicans all sitting there saying, no, 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 then, you know, he comes out and gives a little secret high sign on at the end of the thing, and go do it by reconciliation, and to heck with them.
Exactly. You know, but what he's got to be careful of is that they come out saying yes, and then, you know, let's have the vote, let's set it all up, and then, you know, they'll stick a knife in his back again like they've done, you know.
A million times before. Delay, delay, fail.
Before. Exactly, you know. How many times have they, you know, I was for it before I was against it. You know, they were for a deficit committee until Obama decided he was for it, and then that's not a good idea anymore. And, you know, there are many other examples of that. But listen, boss, I got to get in this meeting.
All right, good luck, and there are 14 senators now, so.
Oh, all right, man. All right.
And I'm trying to find out who the 14 are.
Okay, gain three or four, you know. Three one day gets you four the next, four gets you five, you know.
Five will get you 10, 10 will get you 20.
Yep. But call your senators, everybody call their senators and tell them to sign on to this thing.
And, exactly.
You know, maybe we could pull a miracle here.
Well, get in there and do some educating.
All right, boss.
All right, later.
All right, man. Bye.
Bye now. Out on the road, that's Boss Man Wayne. Here's the list. Michael Bennett, Kirsten Gillibrand, Jeff Merkley, Sherrod Brown, Al Franken, Pat Leahy, John Kerry, Sheldon Whitehouse, here we go. I'm trying. Roland Burris, Bernie Sanders, Dianne Feinstein, Amy Klobuchar, or Klobuchar, not sure which, Ben Cardin, and Carl Levin of Michigan. So, yeah, 14 senators. I think that was 14. So that's the first hour of the program. I'm going to go get that Vonnegut quote. I really, really am. And we will, we'll be back. We've got the Green News Report coming your way. Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen with their usual magnificent job. We'll have that coming up after our little musical interlude. And then your phone calls. You know the number. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Easy, right? Yeah. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Turning back, fly to fancy on a wind swell. feel. Fatal attraction is holding me fast. How can I escape this irresistible grasp? Can't keep my eyes from circling sky. Tongue-tied, twisted, just an earthbound history.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182. 2182.
It's Thursday, February 18th, 2010.
Wacky weather down under, the fog of change, shifting permafrost, plus...
First new nuclear plant in our country in 3 decades.
Obama goes nuclear.
Nuclear or nuclear? All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Nuclear energy. Nuclear waste. Nuclear power. Nuclear power plants. A nuclear test. Nuclear weapons. Nuclear activities. Nuclear aspirations.
Question. Do you prefer a president who can't say the word nuclear but builds no nuclear power plants? Or one who can and does? This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is brought to you by Velvet Revolution's StopTheChamber.com campaign. It's time for we the people to fight back against the corporate cash laundering operation that is the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, especially following the recent Supreme Court ruling allowing unlimited corporate cash in American elections. Please help out by signing on and donating at StopTheChamber.com. Help the citizens take on the unapologetic corporatists, because it's your democracy. Use it or lose it. Visit VR's StopTheChamber.com today. Okay, Desi, troubling concerning Obama and these nuclear power plants, but I suspect we'll get to that in a minute.
Yes, we will. First off, we're glad to report that the weather is cooperating at what's now being called the Glitch Games in Vancouver. Now, we've been having some fun with the wacky weather in North America, but it's important to note that North America isn't the entire world. The Southern Hemisphere is also in the grip of extremes. In Brazil, where the Festival of Carnival is underway, a record heat wave, the worst in at least 50 years, has killed 32 people and forced residents to sleep outside on the beach. In Australia, a series of cyclones have finally brought much-needed rain to the world's driest continent, now in its 13th year of drought, as a state meteorologist explains.
It's good to know that it can still rain. You know, that might seem like a strange statement, but sometimes when a drought goes on for so long and you've got climate change going on in the background, scientists start to worry, look, have we seen a systematic change in the rainfall?
But that's not the only extreme. While the torrential rains caused evacuations in northern Australia, farmers in the south are warning that a heat wave, rivaling last year's record scorcher, is causing massive crop losses. Last week, NOAA, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, announced that globally, January 2010 was the warmest on record, both in the instrument record and the satellite record.
So, this last January was the warmest January on record. That, despite all of these knuckleheads joking about, there's no global warming because it's snowing in Washington, D.C. So, once again, they're what?
Wrong.
Oh, okay.
Now, of course, climate scientists say no one weather event can be directly tied to global warming. They do say more extreme and intense weather events are in line with predictions.
I left my heart.
San Francisco's famous fog is also indicating changing trends. A new study shows a measurable decrease in fog on the Northern California coast, up to 3 hours less fog on an average daily basis. While this is beneficial to drivers, it's not a great deal for California's giant redwood forest. The giant redwoods have adapted to absorb nearly half their water directly from fog, which is partly why they're able to grow to such great heights. The towering trees can live up to 2,000 years and grow nowhere else in the entire world but a 30-mile wide strip in Northern California. And just for good measure, new field data shows that the southern boundary of permafrost in Canada appears to have shifted north. They compared historical records and aerial photos of frozen peat bogs in the James Bay region with new field data and calculated that the southern boundary of permafrost has moved 80 miles north in just the last 50 years.
We are announcing roughly $8 billion in loan guarantees to break ground on the first new nuclear plant in our country in 3 decades.
President Obama gave a huge boost to the nuclear power industry on Tuesday. That $8 billion in subsidies and taxpayer loan guarantees from the Department of Energy will restart, as he said, the nation's nuclear energy industry. The industry suffered a major setback in public opinion after a partial meltdown of a nuclear reactor core at the Three Mile Island power plant in Pennsylvania 31 years ago.
That was so long ago. Why are you bringing that up? Can't you look forward instead of back, Desi?
Well, the Three Mile Island plant did release radiation into the atmosphere, and subsequent investigations into officials' handling of the accident and public safety afterwards led to an outcry to stop further development of nuclear power. The nuclear power industry recently told the Obama administration that no new nuclear plants could be built in the U.S. without federal help. The industry has an historic loan default rate of 50% and therefore has been unable to obtain private sector funding. That's why taxpayer loan guarantees are required.
Socialist nuclear plants?
The Associated Press reports that the first company to receive the subsidies, Southern Company, has twice as many lobbyists in Congress as all the other energy companies and has been instrumental in stalling the climate bill in the Senate.
Doesn't the Senate climate change bill actually include money for nuclear?
Yes, it does.
So why are the nuclear companies against that bill?
Because they also have other power plants that run on coal and natural gas that would be affected by any emissions caps.
Well, I'm against socialized energy. I'm sure John McCain and all the teabaggers will join me in that call.
The President expressed hopes that this move will bring bipartisan support for the climate bill.
Oh, yeah, that'll happen. For more on that and the stuff we didn't get to today, please check our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Follow us on Twitter and download us on iTunes. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Nuclear Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty then, we get back to the business of the show. Another reminder, you know the number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4. Head on, H-E-A-D-O-N. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. This is Conversation Radio. Call the number, get in line, wait your turn, and you know what? Nobody gets hustled off the air here. So that's how it works. Let's see. Let's do go immediately straight back to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, yes, I have to comment on another plane story that some of us have probably already forgotten, or they want us to forget, which is there's a new article in Maxim magazine on Mike Connell, the IT guru for Bush and Rove.
Right, the poster boy for stay off small aircraft.
Right, and apparently Maxim decided to post it in their humor section, which I don't understand. Why they did that?
Well, you know, intellectual depth is not exactly Maxim's strong suit.
Well, I think part of it was I really think part of it was they were scared with the content that they were talking about, so they decided to bury the story. I think they did have some pressure, and apparently reading this, something stuck out to me. How is this okay, asks Heather O'Connell, pulling a chunk of metal from a cardboard box she had brought from the garage. She's kneeling on the floor of her husband's basement office, a tidy space decorated with sleek black office furniture. A photo of a 25-year-old Connell with George H.W. Bush sits on the bookshelf next to an action figure of W, decked out in fighter pilot garb. A cascade of frizzy blonde hair tumbles toward over Heather's face. Her eyes are red from crying. They think this is part of the foot pedal. I didn't go to the crash site on the night he died, she says, picking another piece of debris from the box. As her husband began his final descent, Heather and the rest of the staff gathered at a restaurant for the company's annual Christmas party. I got a message that his plane had landed, she recalls, choking back tears, so I kept calling and calling. This is making me sick again. They told me the plane had crashed and that he was dead, but I didn't want to believe it. I thought maybe he was on his way to the hospital, so I didn't go to the crash site until December 26th. I have pieces of my husband's brain, she says. I picked them up with my hand 6 days after the crash. Chunks of his skin and internal organs. How is that a proper investigation? How is that acceptable? How dare they leave pieces of my husband's brain there? And then one of the most revealing parts, she pulls out another storage box filled with personal items from the crash site. $50 in cash, a charred prayer book with a note inside it reading, I love you, a Mickey Mouse dollar bill. Something important is missing, though. Why do I have his earpiece? She asks, pulling out the jawbone headset of a BlackBerry. This was in his backpack, and the backpack was zipped. So where's his phone? He always clips them next to each other, interjects her 15-year-old daughter. It's an important detail because it suggests that the BlackBerry may have been intentionally removed from the backpack. On it were hundreds, if not thousands, of sensitive files and emails relating to Karl Rove and the Bush administration. And they talk a little bit about smart tech. But this part is where I say, whoa, on this part. He says, they start talking about how there's a letter. Wait a minute, it's right here. Clouding matters further in the persistent specter of paranoid conspiracy that has enveloped the case from the beginning. In September 2009, an anonymous letter was sent to the FBI in Ohio and five other addresses, including Heather Connell. Enclosed is a document that is not meant to exist, begins the anonymous writer. Included is what purports to be an after-action report by a black ops agent. All names have been redacted, but the report provides a detailed time log of actions taken to install an AMD microprocessor in the engine of Connell's planes at College Park Airfield in D.C. the night before he made his fatal last flight. Connell himself is not mentioned by name, just the registration number of his plane, NPN-299N, which the agent confirms he has been sent to neutralize. The letter accompanying the report is headed Michael Connell, homicide. It ends with the words, Connell was not national security threat. And at the end of the article, she says, I don't know if it was an accident or not. But I found those details pretty interesting, that the fact that they didn't find his BlackBerry, the fact that the way they conducted the investigation, and this anonymous letter that was sent to her telling her that he was a target.
Maybe...
I think what's really, really revealing, Bob, the fact that when she says, this is important for people to note, the fact when she went to the airfield, they said they did a thorough investigation and they did it under cover of night with his plane and they didn't pick up the pieces of his body. That tells me that's...
Well, first of all, any accident, okay, and this is just a jurisdictional moment, if there is an air accident, it is immediately within the jurisdiction for investigation of the National Transportation Safety Board.
Mm-hmm.
And the NTSB actually does a pretty decent job of getting on site and getting after stuff pretty quickly.
Right.
If you've ever read an NTSB report like of any of the major airline crashes, I mean, they're pretty thorough.
Mm-hmm.
If it is deemed a crime of some sort, then jurisdiction falls to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And that bunch, not so much.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is they talk about that in one paragraph. They say, normally a night crash scene would be roped off and investigated in daylight. In this case, representatives of the NTSB and FAA used light towers to photograph and document the scene. Connell's plane was hastily removed to a secure hangar under cover of darkness.
And that sounds really, really sinister. But if the plane is in a broadly public area that impedes any sort of going and coming of the public, then that's not unreasonable.
Well, I think the thing to keep in mind is the articles that were missing from the investigation where his BlackBerry was, the fact that she got this letter And then, you know, the fact that they, by 6 a.m., they said the investigators had vanished, leaving behind them a trail of debris. And what I'm saying, Bob, is they didn't sweep the area. They left. I mean.
Well, it was the Bush administration.
I understand that. No, I would think it. I mean.
We are, after all, talking about the gang who could screw up a one-horse parade, right?
Yeah,
competence that was not their long suit.
I understand that, but I think there was more to this investigation than a lot of people said. I think there is.
Well, I mean, I think the Bush family probably had him bumped.
That's what I'm saying.
Because he had everything necessary to drop the dime on what happened in Ohio in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pro job. It's never. I don't think it's ever going to be fully fleshed out.
I hear what you're saying.
And I'll go one step further. This is my moment of extreme meanness for the evening. He was a wingnut. He was a wingnut among wingnuts. He was an evil bastard. If he did help steal the Ohio election, I'll go this far. He got what was coming to him. Plain and simple.
I mean,
anybody who's ever seen a good mob movie knows that, you know, or bank heist movie knows that after you've stolen all the gold, then the fun starts as the guys who had all agreed before the heist that they were going to split the gold then start trying to bump each other off so they can have all the gold. Dead men tell no tales. This is a Bush operation.
I agree with you to an extent of I wouldn't go that far though. I don't know if he I think mostly what it says in the article is the fact that he was an abortionist type fanatic and a lot of these people miss the whole issue of that. You don't just save the babies. You save the adults, you save the elders. It's a gradual step by step. You can't just say I'm going to save the babies and that's how I'm the savior of the universe or the world, or you think you're a good person. You have to follow through all the steps, and I think that's the problem, especially a lot in this country where it concerns a lot of these types of abortionist activists who are decent people, but really. Have taken the Kool-Aid to an extreme.
Well, let me. I guess this is just my night to be a mean SOB.
Yeah.
I have never met an anti-abortion person
mm-hmm.
that I thought was a decent human being. Never. Ever.
I gotta disagree with you there because I've met plenty of people who are completely anti-abortionists, and I think this has to do with something maybe where we differ from regionally. And I've noticed a lot of people, they're just really disconnected and they're misinformed a lot of times, and they just want to find a cause to back. And that happens a lot on the liberal side as well. They just want to find a cause to back and find some meaning to their life, and they decide to pick this issue. I think that happens in a lot of those cases.
Well, I respectfully disagree with you, David, because the abortion movement doesn't work that way. The abortion movement is a full-on, fully funded, multi-billion-dollar industry, okay? And people are pulled out of their pews by right-wing preachers who are spreading talking points that are promulgated by this industry. And people do not act out of good faith in it. Because if you're of good faith, then the only answer is, it's none of my business. And it is, and if they in fact believe in the God that they profess, then there's only one way to look at it, and that is that the act, the choice, is between the pregnant woman and her God and her doctor.
If we were dealing with rational people, yes.
Right, and that's what I've said. I've never met an anti-abortion person that I wanted anything to do with.
Well, see, what you were saying though is anti-abortion. I was just talking about people who have that opinion of anti-abortion, and they've confused themselves and clouded their own mind to think that this is the this is the cause to get behind, but they don't understand. Again, it's way more complex than that, and it's just taking that step isn't gonna help save the world or make the world a better place. It's really beyond delusional at that point.
Fair enough. I think we're, I mean the I'd love for Connell to be alive. I would love for Mike Connell to have survived long enough to have been properly investigated and indicted and seen that man turn state's witness and turn turtle on the likes of Karl Rove and Ken Blackwell. I'd love to have seen that.
And just to make this full circle before
But he was a little mob lieutenant. He was not a capo di tutti capo.
Right, right.
And the
right.
capos di tutti capo wanted him dead.
I hear what you're saying. And just to make this full circle, Tom Hartman was at CPAC today, and he was in quite a heated discussions. And in the middle of it, he was like 30 feet away from Dick Cheney, and he said, "I am having a feeling of whether I should do a citizen's arrest right now." But of course, he didn't do it. But he just thought it was really surreal, the fact that Dick Cheney was right there in front of him, and he couldn't do anything. So I just thought I'd add that as a dovetail, the fact that there it is, the nemesis of nemesis. And even Hartman had that thought, should I do a citizen's arrest, and then finally come to the conclusion that he can't do anything.
Well, there's another conclusion to be reached. There is no such thing as a citizen's arrest.
Yeah,
that's the real hitch in that one. There's no such thing as a citizen's arrest. It's been promulgated by Dragnet and Adam 12 and Hollywood and TV in general. There's no such thing. Because the minute you do that, you subject yourself to profound tort liability for false imprisonment. And you subject yourself to federal criminal liability for kidnapping.
Then there really is no.
There is no such thing as a citizen's arrest.
No, but what I'm saying is then there's really no solution to charge Cheney correctly. No one's going to charge him, not Holder, no one.
No, he's going to walk. And what he's doing is he's going at the whole world as he walks away. Kaiser Zose, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I said it and you went, yeah. So there we go. Yeah, Kaiser Zose.
There you go.
I do not fear God, but I do fear Kaiser Zose. The usual suspects. David, thanks for ringing in. I appreciate it.
No problem.
All right, later. Bye now. This in from Luke in East Tennessee. Five questions. One, I wonder if this guy, this stack guy, was at the town hall meetings last year in Texas. I'm sure CNN will be burning the midnight oil. Yeah, right. Two, or could he have been a supporter of Governor Rick Goodhair Perry and his secession call? Ooh. Well, see, if you were a real journalist, you'd get a photo of the guy. You'd get a photo of the guy, and you'd start going over with a magnifying glass, because that's what's involved with journalism. You'd start going over photos, various photos of the crowds at the teabagger rallies, like at Glenn Beck's 912 project. And you'd find the guy. You'd start checking out Texas Tea Party rallies. Has there been a Tea Party rally in Austin? Anywhere near there? At the state capitol, perhaps? And you'd find him. But no, don't count on the for-profit media to do anything like that. Let's see. Wonder, says Luke, wonder if the NRA and teabaggers will be culling their records as fast as the shredders will work. That I got $5 on. Four, will any one of the for-profit media other than MSNBC have the guts to list him as a domestic terrorist like he should be? No, they won't. Not at all. Because the government has declared him not a terrorist. Because one lone terrorist acting alone, they take, you know, if you brand him a terrorist, then the next thing you know, you got yourself a movement, and he's Randy Weaver all over again, and you got the Waco crowd out there hopping up and down. Five, did he load extra fuel into his plane to make a bigger fire? And I was wondering about that very thing. Did he leave with a full tank? I mean, you really can't carry extra fuel per se in one of those Cherokees. You've either got a full tank or you don't. But, yeah, all valid questions. And by the way, this coming in from Rick Goodner. A long message posted on a website registered to Stack outlined a litany of problems with the IRS and said violence is the only answer. The website was taken offline Thursday afternoon by the hosting company at the request of the FBI. We got it before they took it down. Stack 53 is listed as the owner of a Piper PA-28 Cherokee registered at a previous address in Lincoln, California. Still trying to hide assets from that nasty, nasty IRS. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, you know, I think this is kind of like, you know, it makes you kind of wonder what, you know, the government kind of knows sometimes that what we don't know. Because I'm sure they're watching some other people that are doing, you know, thinking some crazy stuff as well. You know, it's kind of interesting right now.
But the thing that scares me, Gary, is that they're watching the wrong people. They are not watching pissed off white people talking about hanging U.S. senators.
Oh, I think they are. I just think that they're just not good at it. I think they're watching them. I just think they're not good at it. But I know what you're saying. I mean, I kind of understand what you mean. Yeah.
I mean, the comparison that our buddy Lee made. If an American citizen with a Muslim name goes on a shooting rampage at an army base, the right wing is screaming terrorist, terrorist, terrorist. If a white guy with an airplane loaded with fuel flies into a federal government facility, not a terrorist.
Yeah.
Now what's there's only one difference. Can you come up with another difference, Gary?
Well, you know. I mean, I have a perspective that's probably not fair to most white people.
Well, but see, I'm a white guy, and I'm saying it.
I have a built-in bias mechanism that I have to kind of beat off every waking moment.
Yeah, but I mean,
that's how white people are.
But under the circumstances, am I wrong? Is there any difference between him and the Fort Hood shooter, except the skin color and the religion or lack thereof?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I just remember years ago a friend of mine who kind of was working, you know, somewhere with the FBI, and he was telling me, he said, well, you know, the profile of serial killers, they said they always profile white males. So to some degree, they kind of know that, or at least they have some kind of racial profile in that direction as well. But like you said, I think due to the political environment of whatever, it seems that the, I don't know, sometimes I think like what being investigated may be not as clear as what we see in the media. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the media, we see all this, oh, they'll give them a big excuse, a big pass. But maybe the federal authorities, you know, the Waco people, whatever, maybe they're not getting as much of a pass. Maybe they are being watched. You know what I mean?
Well, it's interesting. Rick Goodner's telling me now that Representative Lloyd Doggett, a Democrat from Texas, made a statement earlier today that the crash was what he called, and this is a quote, a cowardly act of domestic terrorism, unquote. The police chief of Austin, however, turned around and said he preferred to describe it as, quote, a criminal act by a lone individual.
Okay. Okay, so now...
Isn't that the difference between black people looting and white people foraging for food in the fetid waters of Katrina?
Hey, there's always been a double standard. you know. And then when you get religion, it amazes me how when religion gets involved in it, you know, how it really gets twisted up, you know. You know, Lord, to find out, you know, I think he went after some, he was like anti-Catholic, right?
Well, there's an anti-Catholic, blast inside his screed. But the thing is, that will be missed completely. It will be used as evidence that the guy was an atheist. Okay? You know, another evil atheist. And don't think for a minute that, that machine is...
He had God in him. That's why he did it.
Didn't have enough Jesus.
He didn't know God. He had enough hate in him. Doesn't matter.
and the point is that they're gonna miss the point entirely. Because this whole thing has to be read in context. And where he mentions his anti-Catholic screed is smack dab in the middle of LaRouche land. I mean, this thing reads like a Lyndon LaRouche wannabe.
From what I understand, Austin's very liberal, like, right? Like, more.
Oh, it is, and he hated Austin. Yeah, there's no real engineers here.
That kind of picked my ears up when I heard Austin. I was like, oh, I think that's because I know a lot of artists in Austin, you know, I've kind of seen, you know, for years, like, and I read about artists from Texas, but they're always in Austin. So it's like, oh, okay, that's the liberal, you know, like Wisconsin. It's like, you know, it's like Madison, you know. It's like, okay, so now he goes off on some place in Austin, and I'm thinking, okay, here we go again, you know. It's never in the middle of, like, a right wing, you know what I'm saying? It's always in the middle of some, like, liberal haven that these things happen, you know. It's kind of...
Well,
it's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's not weird, Gary. It's par for the course.
Exactly.
Because, again, inside this guy's screed that has now apparently been officially disappeared.
Disappeared.
At the request of the FBI.
FBI.
And I hate saying stuff like that because it makes me sound like a real woohoo. But apparently the FBI has requested the hosting company to take the screed down. But when these things happen... They happen in liberal places. And they happen in liberal places because disaffected white people hate the liberalism that they see around them. And in this guy's case, you know, he said, you know, I thought I'd give Texas a try, but there's no real engineers doing engineering work in Austin. You know, they're not as real as he is because he's an engineer who came from California and, curiously enough, kept his airplane registered in California. The sad thing is there's a real disservice being done, Gary, in so far as the thing is being portrayed as an act of a lone individual. Because the fact of the matter is, white right-wing America is at war with us. And I'm not saying that because I want other people to start shooting back and taking down wing nuts. But you know what? If you think that they're not, it makes it easier for them to do their evil.
Well, I had this little theory, and you know, I've been kind of watching this. You know, we've been going back and forth about what Obama's done, not done, what administration's not done. But, you know, my thing is always, you know, of course, sometimes just get the best deal I can, not so much the lesser of two evils. And the thing, one thing I keep hearing from people I talk to, the one thing I keep saying, I said, you know, I really don't think the Republicans are going to get where they want to go. In other words, I don't think they're going to win the White House because I think things will turn in Obama's favor. That being said, you know, I do think there's a certain, obviously, amount in the corporations that are very concerned about the possible directions that progressives could push an Obama administration in, and they don't like that. But by the same token, I think the government is saying, wait a minute, we got a lot of people out here anti-government. We don't know what the hell they're going to do. So we damn sure are not, you know, they're not going to be so friendly to put Tea Party in power, so to speak. You know what I mean? So I think they have this dichotomy where they got to say, well, okay, how do we corporatize Obama's administration as much as we can? You know what I'm saying? That's kind of like, if I was looking at it from a larger, broader power structure corporate point of view, because I do think there's an element of national security is going to be at play if you get a couple more of these wing nuts. I mean, suppose a couple of them get together and do something really crazy. I mean, not that this wasn't crazy. You know what I mean? And that's what the Republicans are lining themselves up with terrorists, actual domestic terrorists, as much as they call Obama terrorists. They are actually the terrorists. They're actually the people who drive, you know, they're actually the people who, you know, what's the matter with Kansas, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, reality and truth, I do believe everything has to show up. I mean, you can't keep putting the veil over people's faces. You can fool a person twice, you know, the thing that looks yeah. at a thousand times. It's like, so I'm kind of wondering, like, where is this thing, you know, where is this final landing spot going to happen? Are they going to corporatize Obama's administration enough? Because I really don't see the Republicans getting back in power. I mean, even though I know people are like running around, oh, they're going to get back. I don't see it, man. I just even George Will came out today, I think it was yesterday, and wrote, Sarah Palin, if she's the nominee, they'll lose 44 states. So I'm just kind of wondering where this thing is going, because I really have a strong feeling the Republicans, this is just the beginning of, you know, some more stuff that's going to go against that whole Tea Party.
Well, I guess the most disturbing thing to me of all, Gary, outside of the event itself, was as I sat there watching on Fox News, because it's my only alternative, and, you know, with stuff like this that's visual, you've kind of got to go get the visual. It was, as I mentioned, the fact that they would talk about this guy, and he's a crazy man. No, he's not a... Yeah, you know, they were that you could tell that there was an editorial pass down of you will not even mention the possibility that this guy might have been a domestic terrorist, that he might have been a right wing terrorist, because on Fox News there are no right wing terrorists, there are only patriots.
I watched some of it too, you know, and then Gary would
cut away to an ad for the Tea Party Express that used language that said, we told them to shape up or ship out. Well, they haven't shaped up, and we're going to Washington to get rid of them.
Well, you know what's even funnier? Then they ran that damn tax master's ad.
Exactly.
So here's a guy who just tried to blow up the IRS, and they run a tax master ad. You know, at some point it gets to the absurdity of everything, you know? I mean, Fox is just, I mean, it's almost like, you know, again, it's like George Carlin said. Like we're watching a freak show. I mean, these people, man. I mean, the guy clearly committed an act of terror. You know, I don't know if I'm going to label him a terrorist. Lone wolf, whatever. But he terrorized. I mean, if there's more people in that building, that's terrorism.
Well, but in his manifesto, Gary, he says, mm-hmm. That he wants to wake...
It's a terrorist letter.
Yeah, he says he wants to wake the zombies up. And he says that, among other things, that he's doing it to start a revolt in this country, mm-hmm. a revolution. And the definition of terrorism is to use violent force against innocent civilians for purposes of advancing a political agenda. Now, if that's right. The definition of terrorism, and that is my understanding of the working definition of terrorism, then how is this not?
Yeah, anybody wants to know the basic premier point of view of the modern day terrorism music, the movement just needs to read a book, Wretched of the Earth, by Frantz Fanon. I mean, he wrote it, you know, based on the Algerian Revolution in 1953. But that's like a big manifesto, and it talks about that. And everything that this guy said today fits that bill of terrorism. He also said there was more like him, that he would not be the first or the last to believe that manifesto. So that's the case. This is an act of terrorism. What he left was a terrorist letter, and I mean, I don't see why people are like looking at it any other way, you know. But of course, this is going to be a political football. We'll see how it goes, but it's going to be a political football.
And it's going to be a political football because no one on our side will come out and say, no one on our side with any power. Obviously, I'm doing it. Nobody on our side with any power will come out and say what this thing is. No one will come out and say, oh, look, that's a terrorist. Instead, they'll call him a lone wolf, a lone individual, a crazed individual, an insane man. And you know what? You cannot hide this burgeoning warfare against normal America behind insanity any longer.
Well, that's
because if it's insanity, Gary, it's group insanity. It's mass insanity.
Well, Janet... Napolitano come out and say this was a failure. Will Barack Obama come out and say this was a failure of the system? No. Because can't say that about crazed white male in this country.
No.
I hate to say it. People don't want to listen to it, but I tell people all the time, you know, there's a certain pass that people get. Now, you get a young black African male, you know, and I'm not going to bring it to the race thing, but let's look at it this way. He gets on a plane and tries to blow up a bunch of planes, you know, okay, whatever. First of all, he got on in overseas, so it ain't like he jumped on a plane here in Detroit. You know what I'm saying? And he gets to security. He goes through the whole situation. There's a big to-do by the Republicans. They carry this forever. But I guarantee you, by tomorrow, or probably the next 2 days, in fact, I was listening to a little bit of Sean Hannity. I know he was at CPAC today. I was going to see if he was going to say anything about it. Quiet. Even the Drudge Report. They mention it, but there's no political spin. There's no pointing toward Obama done failed to protect us from this lone white person. You know what I'm saying? And that's the double bias in this country, you know. It's, you know, and it's, sometimes it's beyond just racism. It's always political. I mean, yes, racism, but I think a lot of times people do this aren't necessarily just racist. It's just the fact they'll use race. They'll use religion. They probably don't really care either way if the guy was black or white, but they figure they can get enough people ginned up about it.
Well, okay, let me give you one more piece of evidence, Gary. I mentioned this earlier on because it just leaped off the page at me. It has always been a myth that people have stopped dying for their freedom in this country, and it isn't limited to the blacks and poor immigrants. So by saying that, he is asserting in reverse that that there's a national sense that the only people who have ever suffered in this country are what he calls blacks and poor immigrants. Well, blacks is obvious. That's kind of in your face. But what does that mean, poor immigrants? Is he talking about Mexicans? He's in Texas.
Well, I mean, he's probably an immigrant if he studied himself very well.
Well, but wait, I've got a clue for you. And this was pointed out to me by Rick Goodner a couple of minutes ago. Poor immigrants. Who were the two primary targets of the Klan? Bingo. So we go down here a little bit toward the end, the last statement of the last full paragraph that's not a one-liner. He says, well, Mr. Big Brother IRS man, let's try something different. Take my pound of flesh and sleep well. Where does that term come from? Where does the term pound of flesh come from?
I've heard it before, but I'm not.
It comes from a Shakespeare play called The Merchant of Venice. And in The Merchant of Venice, a Jewish moneylender named Shylock demands in the case of default on a loan, a pound of flesh from the guy borrowing the money. And when the default is called, he declares that the pound of flesh that he wants is the defaulter's beating heart. So buried, you as an American black male, Gary, you know code real well. And I have tried, racist code. I've tried to educate myself on it, too. And this is that. It is buried all over this thing. Who else did the Klan hate? Besides blacks and Jews, if you were white as ivory soap, but you were a... who couldn't join?
Let me remember. It was a Catholic?
Yes. And there's an anti-Catholic screed in here, too. This guy is a racist, white supremacist, terrorist. You know, somebody get me on MSNBC so I can explain this to people.
I'm telling you.
Because these bastards are at war with us.
He's going to get the pass. And see, the thing that's shameful about it is that, you know, it's like being an African-American male. There's a certain type of black male in our community. Chris Rock made his famous thing years ago about it, which I didn't kind of agree with what he said, where he used like the N-words, and he said that there's black people and there's N's. And
I hate that. I really hate that.
Yeah, I hate that. But I think you know, if I was to take a little further, I would say, yes, there's an element in our community that, for whatever reason, you can put whatever this and that, I just knucklehead. And, you know, but that's in every community that you have. And the same thing with the white community. The problem is that within the white community, it seems as if there has to be a guise pulled over for the knuckleheads in the white community. You know what I'm saying? Black community, you get a couple of knuckleheads, they'll put them in jail, put them on screen, yeah, he's a, you know, have them on Maury Povich or whatever, show or whatever. And they'll, you know, Flavor Flav, you know, give them a show, you know, whatever. But there seems to be this double standard when it comes to the white, frustrated, down and out, defeatist male. It's almost like, it's like, we can't show that guy because that white male is the ultimate optimal vision of failure. And the white male cannot ever have a vision of failure in the popular culture. That's not acceptable. It's acceptable for women, for Mexicans, for blacks. You know, there's a comedian out there. I don't know if you've ever seen him. His name is Paul Mooney.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I've been to a couple of his shows. And, you know, I know some people probably have problems with it because he's very hard on whites. Anyway, I've been to a number of his shows once, a couple of, he had in D.C. and New York. And the thing that's very weird about it, I would watch this because I know his routine, you know, pretty much. You have blacks and whites, and a lot of whites that know his routine. But when he would get in, he really, all his routine is about, he talks about the dumb stuff that white people do. And it's funny, you know, whatever. But he'll talk about black people, he'll talk about Mexicans, he'll talk about every other group, Jewish people, whatever. But he always points out his routine that white folks have problems when they start talking about white people. And it's very funny because he'll start making jokes about white people, and you can literally, I've seen white people just get out and start walking. They can't take the jokes. You know, I'm not saying all white people, I'm just saying the people in these shows. But his point is that there seems to be this little thing in America that whites can't face a certain amount of criticism. That this white supremacy has been pushed across the world for the last 2,000 years. You cannot evaluate the failures that white people have made because And again, these people are not white. They're just lighter pigmentation. They're my brothers. So I'm just using that as a
term
that we're kind of all familiar with. So there's no division here when I say it that way. But the point being, it just was since targeting a demographic group, it seems to be there's this built-in nature that we cannot criticize white males who are frustrated.
No, because it's a function of white privilege. You know, I think I've even referenced it in conversations with you before, but there's that passage in one of those favorite books of mine, To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee, where Atticus, in making his defense Tom Robinson, accused of raping a white woman, looks an all-white jury of 12 men in the eye and says, Tom Robinson's only crime was that he took pity on a white woman. Because of all the things out there, the one thing that a racist society cannot tolerate is for a person in the class subjected to the negative bias to actually look past it and feel sorry and feel pity for the people in the protected, privileged class. It goes all the way back to the foundation of this country, Gary. The first thing that the plantation owners did is drive a wedge between the white slaves, and there were white slaves. We just gave them a prettier name. They were called indentured servants.
7 years and you're gone.
Yeah, if you survived. Because a white indentured servant didn't have to be treated any better than a black slave did. And the first thing that the plantation owners did upon crafting this insidious system was to make sure that they quietly whispered to the indentured servants, yeah, but you're white. You're better than them.
Well, they took the light-skinned blacks or the ones from, you know, did you know how that goes?
And then that whole insidious caste system of mulatto versus octoroon versus, you know,
paper bag.
Yeah, rises up out of all of that. The fingernail test in the South. If you had it was basically an urban legend of the 19th and 18th centuries. If you had a white moon, a sort of a crescent moon shape at the back of your fingernail, That was said to be proof that you were carrying some degree of black blood. Because racist societies are wholly engaged in absolutely psychotic behavior. Whether it's South Africa, the United States, wherever.
But, you know, when all said and done, when it looks back at it, you know, someone was talking to somebody about this the other day, people always talk about, you know, what everybody's fighting over, but I say, hey, it's my opinion. But it's not necessarily poppy fields. It's not about oil. It's the one finite thing that's not finite, and that's people. So when it's all said and done, it's always like, okay, because that's where all the wealth, the money comes from, as we all know, is from, you know, people. I mean, you get money by exploitation. People, Malcolm X talks about it. He said you can't have capitalism without exploitation of a group of people, it's just unless they're going to make robots. You know what I mean? It's so in all of that racism that we fight here on the lower echelon levels of, you know, people on the lower levels, you know, but the people at the top or people who, you know, if you think they got it to manifest destiny or whatever, they just sit back and they just plot us against each other. But to them, I don't even think it's really about race. It's more or less they can just use it as a tool to keep us, you know, continually fighting over each other. And I'm telling you, like you said, I'm going to let you go because I know you got the Green Report coming on. But and I'm interested to see what, you know, MSNBC is going to do tonight on it because I know people are going to come straight at the race thing. But that being said, the rest of us, you know, media, you're going to see it again, as you say. They're going to just pass over this. It's going to be amazing to sit and watch how this guy is just going to be like, just let off the hook, you know? And I'd be surprised, Bob, if we're talking about this guy next Tuesday. I mean, not us, but I'm saying, you know what I'm saying, the mainstream media. I would be very surprised.
Well, and no, it won't. Look, this is Thursday. It will not make it past the Friday news dump.
How'd you put pessimistic to me? You're saying tomorrow they're going to end it. Yeah, you might be right. Yeah, you're probably right.
Nothing to see here. Keep moving. These are not the droids you were looking for.
And the FBI and the CIA is already on top of it. Take the damn site down.
Well, you want to hear the? You're going to love this. You want to hear the message when you go to the original site where this thing was posted?
Yeah, what is it?
This website has been taken offline due to the sensitive nature of the events that transpired in Texas this morning and in compliance with a request from the FBI. What right does the FBI have to tell somebody to take a request? No, sucker. Get a warrant.
Yeah. We got lawyers. You got lawyers? We got lawyers.
Did they, you know, and look, I'm not trying to be paranoid here. Did they drop a national security letter on these people? T-35 hosting?
I agree with you. I'm starting to think now it's going to probably be... I'll split you the difference. I say Saturday.
All right, Saturday it is.
Okay.
Thanks, Gary.
All right, man. We'll let you go. All right, man.
Bye now. You want to chime in on this? It looks like we've got a mono-issue show here. Do feel free if you wish. Serious question. What right... Outside of the phony, vacuous claim of national security, what right does the FBI have for taking this down and trying to keep you and I from seeing it? Or analyzing it? I would submit to you that the answer is none. None. Oh, dear God. Yeah. You're right. David from South Carolina. The news cycle will be overtaken by Tiger Woods. It's all over because tomorrow Tiger has a press conference. Ick. Just... And if I failed to mention it, I did explain that in The Merchant of Venice, Shylock, the person who declares his desire for the pound of flesh with which the creepy in Austin equates the IRS and the federal government. Shylock's a Jew. This is a sick and psychotic country. And toward that end, before we take our break, I want to read something to you. If you don't keep a library of Kurt Vonnegut on hand, you damned well should. Oh, tomorrow's going to be even worse. It's not a Tiger press conference, it's a Tiger speech. No questions will be answered, and it's invitation only. Well, that'll just gin up more speculation in the vacuous for-profit media. And this story will be gone quicker than we even imagined. Because, you know, Tiger, that brown guy, you know, he liked to have sex with blonde white women. Oh, God! What did I say about a racist country being a psychotic country? See? There's a Kurt Vonnegut book out there called God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater. And it's a piece of genius. Now, first of all, any book that begins with the following premise, let me see here. Where is it? Gotta find it. Ah, here it is. This is the premise. Any book that begins with a premise like this, you know, is worth reading. In every big transaction, there is a magic moment during which a man has surrendered a treasure, and during which the man who is due to receive it has not yet done so. An alert lawyer will make that moment his own, possessing the treasure for a magic microsecond, taking a little of it, passing it on. If the man who is to receive the treasure is unused to wealth, has an inferiority complex and shapeless feelings of guilt, as most people do, the lawyer can often take as much as half the bundle and still receive the recipient's blubbering thanks. In every big transaction, there is a magic moment during which a man has surrendered treasure, and during which the man who is due to receive it has not yet done so. An alert lawyer will make that moment his own, possessing the treasure for a magic microsecond, taking a little of it, passing it on. If the man who is to receive the treasure is unused to wealth, has an inferiority complex and shapeless feelings of guilt, as most people do, the lawyer can often take as much as half the bundle and still receive the recipient's blubbering thanks. How do you like that? Now, let's try this on for size. And this is a fictional psychiatric report. Sameritrophia is the suppression of an overactive conscience by the rest of the mind. You must take all instruction from me, the conscience shrieks. In effect, to all the other mental processes. The other processes try it for a while, note that the conscience is unappeased, that it continues to shriek, and they note, too, that the outside world has not been even microscopically improved by the unselfish acts the conscience had demanded. They rebel at last. They pitch the tyrannous conscience down an oubliette, weld shut the manhole cover of that dark dungeon. They can hear the conscience no more. In the sweet silence, the mental processes look about for a new leader, and the leader most prompt to appear whenever the conscience is stilled is enlightened self-interest. And it does appear. Enlightened self-interest gives them a flag which they adore on sight. It is essentially the black and white Jolly Roger with these words written beneath the skull and crossbones: "The hell with you, Jack! I've got mine!" Okay? And then this, the conclusion. Write this one down. Hang on to this like grim death. Hang on to this for dear life. a normal person. And you see, this is the first time I've ever read this Vonnegut book. But damned if I haven't said this on this program in a much less elegant form. A normal person. Let's do this again. Make it stick. A normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous, industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. A normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous, industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. Because it's been thrown down that oubliette, the manhole cover welded shut, and enlightened self-interest rules the day. And what happens when you mix that enlightened self-interest with unenlightened racism, teabaggerism, birtherism, deatherism, tentherism, booger-eaterism? What happens is Mr. Stack. Are we clear? I should hope so. And that's the thing. This thing that went down today in Austin will be treated as some sort of inexplicable, absurdist event when it's not. It will be treated as if it is some sort of set piece from a Camus novel when it is not. This is wholly explainable, and I have just spent 2 hours, I think, explaining the reality of the situation. It is not going to happen anywhere else. You know, I resent this bastard. I don't like doing mono-themed shows. But God, when these right-wing sons of bitches attack, somebody has to. You got to turn on the searchlight and focus it on the wall and say, look at it! Look at it! That's what this means. And Fox News runs the Tea Party Express ads in between updates on the guy they won't call a terrorist because he was just a little too white to be one. The Tea Party Express is going to start in Searchlight, Nevada. Listen to where they're going. Searchlight, Nevada, Phoenix, Arizona, St. George, Utah, Provo, Utah, Grand Junction, Colorado, North Platte, Nebraska on April Fool's Day, Topeka, Kansas, Little Rock, Arkansas, Huntsville, Alabama. Matt Osborne, you listening? That's Sunday, April 4th. Evansville, Indiana, St. Louis, Missouri, Springfield, Illinois, Davenport, Iowa, Rockford, Illinois, Madison, Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Green Bay, Wisconsin, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Duluth, Minnesota, Ironwood, Michigan, Escanaba, Michigan, Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, Traverse City, Michigan, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Lansing, Michigan, Detroit, Michigan, Cleveland, Ohio, Erie, Pennsylvania, Buffalo, New York, Syracuse, New York, Albany, New York, Concord, New Hampshire, Boston, Massachusetts, and then Washington, D.C. It's a damn tour through the heartland, through the whitest parts of white America. Trust me, there won't be any disaffected Muslims from Michigan in that crowd when they're there. That birther, deather, tenther, bagger, booger-eater crowd would rip the flesh off their limbs. I wish I was kidding.
By the millions, supporters of the Tea Party movement have warned the politicians to change their tax spend and bailout ways.
Warned, goddammit!
Government politicians ignored us. So now, it's time to vote them out. The Tea Party Express is back, and we're going to vote these failed politicians out of office. Join us at teapartyexpress.org. Vote them
out. Our country deserves better. PAC. Teapartyexpress.org is responsible for the content of this ad.
Well, our country got better today, I suppose. by the plane load in Austin, Texas. Evil sons of bitches! And they're proud of it. And by the way, the politicians, when they mentioned, we warned the politicians. It's a photograph of Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama, and Harry Reid. We warned them. We warned them. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Is that Bob?
It is Bob.
Bob, I didn't think I'd be calling until next week, but the events today, I had to call.
I understand.
This is Gareth again. How you doing?
Pretty good. I thought that was you.
Yeah. The reason this kind of freaked me out, too, because nobody else got killed except for the guy in the plane. Is that correct or am I wrong?
That is what is being reported, although there was at least one person that was, I think, badly burned.
Okay, so because of that, you know what's worrying me about this? There's potential here for Waco-style martyrdom, don't you think?
Oh, gosh, yes. You know, that's something that was said by horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner early in the program by email. This guy is an underground hero of the Tea Party already.
Because we have to start, okay, they want us to look at him as a victim of too much government, I assume?
Of course, yes.
Okay, and the mental illness aspect is going to be minimized, I take it.
No, the mental illness aspect will be maximized.
He was driven crazy by the government.
No, just that he was crazy. He wasn't driven crazy by the government. He's just crazy. There's nothing to see here. Keep moving. Just crazy man in an airplane. It's not that he's a right-winger. It's not that his manifesto is full of anti-Catholic, anti-Jew, anti-black references. That doesn't matter. He's just a crazy guy, just crazy.
That's the spin, okay.
I've already heard it on Fox today, Gareth.
That's an interesting way of, okay, I see what they've done.
You know, sometimes crazy just gets up and gets in an airplane and flies it into a building. I heard Shepard Smith say it today.
It always, worries, it freaked me out a little bit because I don't want to knock the industry because I've made such a pretty comfortable living as a software developer, but it's not the first time I've heard about guys in this particular field going off. And it has something to do with, like, I guess I'm probably more normal than most people in that world, but the guy who shot up those people in Pittsburgh, remember that a few months ago?
Yeah.
Another software guy. He was a developer. And sometimes there's a weird connection between, and here's the other disturbing thing. A huge percentage of those guys, now I'm not one of them, is very right-leaning. I don't know why, but that's been my experience. I can't figure out the reasoning, but it has to do with paranoia. And
may I offer a quick guess as to why that is? Because the computer business and the code writing business originates out of the defense industry.
The code I do. It's funny you say that because the code I'm involved in, I've been developing for many years now, it has to do with, we handle a lot of injured workers for the government. You know, we do their invoicing, we handle case management, blah, 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 all that stuff. And I had to go under the lights recently out, down there in Pittsburgh to meet the government people to make sure. I could have forgot why they wanted to meet me. And it took me a while, then I started to realize they wanted to make sure I wasn't a Muslim or something. You know? So you got really paranoid with all these questions you're asking you, because I'm in control of all the software, you know? And you do get paranoid. And if you don't know how to deal with it properly, you can end up by saying, you know, they're all out to get me. And there's a lot of the paranoid people are in the you call them the teabaggers, right?
Yeah.
There's a healthy percentage of them who are pretty paranoid.
I would go so far as to say it's past a plurality, it's a majority. Every operating principle of the teabag movement is rooted, deep taproots way into the ground in nothing but pure paranoia, Gareth.
Right. And nothing ruins a teabagger's day like facts. you know? Have you noticed that, too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they've got this entire fantasy of a government that overnight, Gareth, overnight, became this monolithic, seething, flesh-eating, soul-stealing organism, and it was all because a black man became president.
Right, yeah. I think
because everything they complain about happened and was put in place and begun under the Bush administration.
Right.
But they were as quiet as the grave.
Yep, you're right, and they're trying to pin the economy, which is going to take years to recover from that disaster. They've already tried to pin it on him. That's what really
is. Yeah, they are utterly divorced from anything vaguely resembling reality.
Yeah, and are you serious about all those locations that they're going to be?
Yes, that's the Teabagger Express.
Like I was telling you last night, I can't figure out why we can't get something from the independent grassroots world.
Well, can I answer that? The reason we can't get that something like that going in the independent liberalish grassroots world is because we don't have independent liberalish grassroots money. There's nothing grassroots about this thing, Gareth. It is a fully funded function of the intense right-wing manipulation machine. It starts with an organization that's run by the Dick Armey. You remember who he was?
Oh God, yeah.
Called Freedom Works. And they're behind all of this, and they are pumping millions of dollars into it.
Right. These meetings they organize, somebody has to pay for rooms, I assume, space, speakers.
Well, yeah, but you suck some of that back out of the rubes.
True. I mean, they're selling T-shirts at some of these things, I'm sure, by now. And or coffee mugs, I saw one of them.
Oh, gosh, you can buy all kinds of stuff on this site.
Yeah, I mean, and what gets me is I saw something on a mug, the Obama with the giant ears, borderline racial stuff, you know? Have you seen those?
Oh, yes.
That to me is a major thing.
There was a poster, I think, at that Washington affair where the teabagger said she wanted to hang Senator Patty Murray. There was a poster there of Obama crudely drawn as a monkey, and the sign and the words underneath it said "Geld Obama."
These are the same people who are not afraid to put up really creepy pictures at the abortion clinics, you know, the same types, right?
Right, and they're LaRouchers.
Yeah, I can't believe those guys are still around.
And they've got their roots in the 1990s so-called Patriot Movement.
That's right.
You know what the right wing genius of this is that these Freedom Works people and so forth did is they tapped into all of these fringe groups and brought them together under one umbrella and called it the Tea Party and said that it stands for taxed enough already. Well, guess what Yahoo with the airplane said today? That he was taxed enough.
Right. Well, the guy had a bunch of software business ventures that didn't pan out, you know, And look at
how he blames, and this is typical right-wing behavior, look at how he blames others for his failings. You know, he said things weren't going so well in California, so I moved to Texas. But darned if I didn't find out in Texas that there's no real engineering going on in Texas.
Is that what he said?
Yeah, it's in there.
You see, a lot of software guys can be arrogant like that. That's common. Those are the ones I stay away from. There's always a screw loose when they talk like that. I was telling you yesterday, between the farm and the guitar, I keep it balanced, but some of these guys are, that's it. That is the world, you know, and the paranoia creeps in, and then the planes fly into buildings, and the whole culture is paranoid in general, and what's scary is that the teabaggers are actually capitalizing on it. That's what bothers me. They turned it into a form of capital. And, I think we all agree that the taxes, you feel like you're getting taxed too much to a certain degree, I'm sure.
Me?
You know, on a federal level, do you feel like you're getting taxed a little too much?
No, and no, because...
Or are you bothered about where it's going to? That's what bothers everybody.
Well, sure I am. I'm funding a war against people I don't hate.
Well, how do you feel about how do you feel about helping finance the guy's golden parachute at Goldman Sachs?
Yeah, it doesn't sit well with me at all.
Right.
But
that's the thing. It all depends on how you deal with it. And
that's a failure. That's a failure of accomplishment, not a failure of the idea. You know, letting and the teabaggers see no distinction between the two, Gareth.
Or
not a failure of accomplishment, but a failure of implementation. The bailout was a case of act in haste, repent in leisure.
Well, the bailout has turned into the greatest giveaway of wealth from the middle class to the rich in history.
Outside of the Bush tax cuts, absolutely.
Yes, and I understand that anger, but this guy is talking on a personal level. That he has a more paranoid thing going, but you're right that.
Well, see, there's a seed hidden in there too, Gareth, and let me see if I can find it real quick because it's fairly important. It comes when he offers his hatred of the Catholic Church.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, he hates the Catholic Church too. Let me find it real quick. It'll take me just a second. I'm sorry, I can't do this very well on the fly.
I didn't realize.
Here it is.
Is he one of these recovering altar boys?
No, I don't think so. No, he's a LaRoucher. Because
he's that far. He's
Catholic hate is big in the LaRoucher community. And when he starts referencing that the only blacks and poor immigrants aren't the only ones who have ever died for freedom, that's a backhanded reference at blacks and Jews, which identifies him as, you know, right wing racist. That's typical Klan talk. It's also
please update me on LaRouche. Is he dead or in jail?
I think he's still in prison.
Ah,
I can't recall right offhand. But anyway, this one paragraph here. Listen to this.
Yeah.
My introduction to the real American nightmare starts back in the early 80s. Unfortunately, after more than 16 years of school, somewhere along the line, I picked up the absurd, pompous notion that I could read and understand plain English. Okay, now see, this is a back reference to some of that stuff like happens in Richard II in Shakespeare, where you get that line, first thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers. All right? And it's always worth remembering that that line is uttered by a person who wishes to overthrow the government and impose dictatorship.
That's right.
It's not a friendly line. It's not a line. It's not a respectable line. So that's what that is. Some friends introduced me to a group of people who were having tax code readings and discussions. Really? In the 80s? Who was having tax code readings and discussions? Well, those would be LaRouchers.
Yeah, they were obsessed. Yeah.
In particular, zeroed in on a section relating to the wonderful exemptions that make institutions like the vulgar, corrupt Catholic Church so incredibly wealthy. We carefully studied the law with the help of some of the best high-paid, experienced tax lawyers in the business, and then began to do exactly what the big boys were doing, except that we weren't stealing from our congregation or lying to the government about our massive profits in the name of God. So I guess they were just lying to the government about their massive profits in their own name. We took a great deal of care to make it all visible, following all the rules exactly the way the law said it was to be done.
Right, so I can see, okay, so the Catholic Church has that massive tax forgiveness, which probably is not something he...
Well, do you remember the Idaho Bunch with Randy Weaver?
Oh, God, yeah.
Remember what they were into?
They held up in the woods, right, or something?
Well, not just that. Portions of that movement were out there printing their own money.
Oh, that's right, Confederate money or something.
You know, it's all very Ayn Randian, it's all very LaRouche-y, it's all very anarcho-capitalist.
The LaRouche's, to me, are borderline anarchists to a certain degree, aren't they?
But if they are, it is not within the traditional manifestation of anarchy that we are currently told holds sway. And, you know, that's a bunch of disaffected teenagers in ski masks turning over mailboxes.
Yeah.
And they're traditionally associated with the left wing.
Those are guys, most of those guys are, I knew some of them at Rutgers, they just haven't, the vast majority haven't grown up, unfortunately. That crowd, I know you're talking about. The ones with the, you know, the ones with the tie-dye shirts out there at the Olympics right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that crowd, yeah. I mean, most of those guys are just arguing with their dads for the sake of arguing with their dads. Remember that Mark Twain quote? Me and my dad, we argued incessantly when I was 17, 18 years old.
And when I came...
By the time I was 30, I was stunned how much the old man had learned.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Most of those guys are just confused. But the LaRouchers are more sinister, in my opinion.
Yeah. As were the Randy Weaver crowd in Idaho. You know, they were running entire criminal enterprises. You know, check fraud, check kiting, money printing, it all, and because they said that's how they read the Constitution.
Right. They believe that the, I assume they believe that paying taxes was not even constitutional.
Oh, no. No, it's not constitutional. That's when the government sold out to the Jewish banking interests in the teen decade. That's what we did. We sold out American freedom to the Jew bankers.
Yeah, they're still holding on to that one, despite the fact that the first federal income tax helped finance the Civil War. They're still holding on to that one. It's just interesting to me. But these people are still reading Mein Kampf, I think. You know, they probably still think it's pretty eloquent. That's the impression. Wasn't there a group of neocons? Did you hear about this? This creeped me out. A group of neocons. You may have heard this 6 months ago in the news, 7 months ago. I forget the name of this group. It was pretty sinister sounding. They were actually using Adolf Hitler's management skills as training.
No, that one runs right past me. I'm not.
Oh, it was creepy. I forget the name of the group. They were called they were a heavy neocon. But they were looking at Hitler's, not his politics necessarily, just his style of management was very effective. It got their country out of runaway inflation and runaway unemployment, blah blah blah, and he had things in lockstep in 10 years. You know, and they were using that as a management training technique. I'm totally serious. I forget the name of it.
Well, I don't doubt it in the least. Every manifestation of right wing evil has popped up like dandelions after a rain somewhere in the American right. Look at Grover Norquist, for God's sakes. The man says, I want to make the government small enough to drown it in a bathtub. And then he does, and we get Katrina. And the man is still spoken to in polite society, Gareth.
That's incredible to me. And, sometimes I don't believe the things you're saying. I thought maybe you're joking, so I'll look it up online. Like, for example, the other day,
fact check me.
I know, I thought you were goofing around. Okay, here's an example. You were saying, I tune in, and you're talking about, I forget what you call Rush Limbaugh. You have a bunch of funny names for him.
Yeah, Flush Flimball, among other things, yeah.
Yeah, and you were saying, I thought you were just joking. You're saying, in his voice, you're saying, we were not put here to pollute. God doesn't want that, you know? And I thought you were joking. But I checked it out, and I found him saying those very words, that he believed that God did not put humans here to pollute. In other words, it's not our destiny to cause warming and CO2 emissions. It's not our – God would want that. But he actually said this. You know, I thought that was a joke. And Malloy repeated it too. Did you hear this statement?
Which?
The Rush Limbaugh claim saying that.
Yeah. Oh, that it's not our destiny?
Yeah.
I ran it. I played it.
Yeah, I thought it was a goof until I found the, I must have gotten into the story late, but then I looked it up and there it was. And then I realized that everything you said about him being off his rocker and finally losing it is, it's officially true. what he says is so stupid. It's almost like saying God didn't put you here, Rush, to get addicted to OxyContin. You know? But it happened.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. Wish I'd thought of that.
It's that illogical to me. And that was when I realized he can get away with anything now. And somebody somewhere is going to buy it. And that's pretty powerful. That means you got a lot of power when you can say something that stupid. And someone's going to go, you know, he's right.
But it's beyond power, Gareth. Let me reinforce this. I got to go in a minute, but let me reinforce this.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It's beyond power. It has more to do. It has more to do with than mere sheer raw power. It is the fact that there is a vast cocoon around a fiendish freak like Rush Limbaugh,
mm-hmm.
that protects him. The man, at the time that he was going through the OxyContin business, there was a man serving, I think, 30 years.
Yeah.
In Florida State Penitentiary, which is a hell on earth, for doing the same thing that Rush Limbaugh did.
The exact same thing.
The identical thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy actually had a disease. And Florida locked him away for his adult life.
And this is a guy who still says, medical marijuana is a disaster.
You'll notice that after Rush Limbaugh's run-in with the law, he quit talking about injustice having been done in the O.J. trial.
Yeah, that was...
And I have never since... Now, he used to ride the American Civil Liberties Union like a borrowed mule. After his run-in with OxyContin, Gareth, he has never said another word about the American Civil Liberties Union. Why? Because the American Civil Liberties Union came running to his defense.
That's the... They have a... ACLU has got a weird situation on their hands. They have to defend the local KKK walk, and they have to defend the guy who wants to blow up the courthouse at the same time,
that's who they are.
You know? Yeah, they call it's a strange organization.
Well, I don't see it. I see them as being absolutely laser beam focused on their mission. They don't get to pick and choose, and they get some really lousy clients, but their mission, Gareth, is that their main client is the Constitution of the United States, the Bill of Rights, and our civil liberties. They don't defend Rush Limbaugh because Rush Limbaugh's a great guy. They don't defend Nazis because Nazis are good people. They defend them because you and I are good people. And it's our rights that are on the line when those people are charged.
Yeah, it's a psychotic defense of First Amendment. I understand that, you know. The next time, I'll let you go here. The next time you summarize something from that Excellence in Bullshit Network, you know, I'll believe it from here on.
No, English major moment. Never don't fact check me.
I know, but so far, it's all becoming like Goebbels. What's the famous quote? To tell a lie big enough, people believe it, right? Is that what it was?
Yeah, the big lie theory. It becomes the truth.
Right. And I think he's taken that. He's the great inheritor of that philosophy.
The entire right-wing Republican machine is, without a doubt. And, of course, that takes in thousands and thousands and thousands of hours every day of right-wing hate that's spread over the public airwaves, like manure over so many strawberries, to get back to our farming reference.
Yeah. right.
Well, Gareth, have a wonderful evening. It's great talking to you again.
Yeah, I'll catch you next week. Thanks again.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. Bye now. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is it me?
It is you.
Hey, Bob. This is Grant.
Hey, Grant. How you doing?
Doing pretty good, man. You know, I missed the first hour of the show today. I understand there was a plane that went into a building and it was a Larouche, and it's just sort of been picking up the crumbs along the way here.
Well, I try to leave a breadcrumb trail.
And that you did. Now, when I'm putting my head around it, I'm saying, okay, well, he had a backpack full of Karl Rove papers. Looks like somebody monkeyed with his rig. He goes down, there's a note, no BlackBerry.
No, that's a guy in Ohio. That's not what happened today.
Okay. I'm mixing them diamonds with the pearls there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, because I was going to ask, I mean, as far as the one with the missing backpack or the Karl Rove papers and all that, I guess I should reference that then and say, okay, well, this pretty much looks like a black op. And
no, it wasn't a black op. It was a mob hit.
A mob hit.
Huh? Yeah, okay. Because there's a reason that Malloy calls them the Bush crime family. They are the biggest, most pernicious organized crime family in America today. And the guy that went down, and the guy from Ohio that went down, was the part and parcel of the whole theft of the Ohio election in 2004. What happened today is the disaffected, racist, LaRoucher, probably teabagger type. Got aboard his airplane after publishing a manifesto online, a screed, really,
uh-huh.
and flew it into the building that houses IRS offices in Austin.
Taliban tactics, right.
And I guess what I've spent the bulk of the show doing tonight, Grant, is attempting to do a little bit of what the for-profit media will not do, and that is to closely analyze this thing and come up with a picture of what this guy is. You know, I
appreciate that. You do us quite a service with that. Well, along those lines, though, what I was kind of calling about is, I'm beginning more and more to sort of frame this scene, at least with my internal dialogue, as more of a we're in the throes of a domestic Cold War, and it's now turning warm to hot, or soon to turn warm to hot.
That is exactly what this is, Grant.
I'm just kind of curious why they chose this particular opportunity. On one hand, we've got the Bush crime family tying up some loose ends here, and then we've got, hey, looky over here, disgruntled LaRouche, you know, batshit crazy dude with airplane. We've got, you know, I'm just kind of wondering, if we can pull back a little bit, okay, I'm just kind of wondering where the next shoe drops, basically. Where does this go?
But again, don't view this as an isolated incident, Grant. This is an incident occurring on a continuum. And there are points along, you know, just think of a straight line bar graph. And this is, and it's strictly temporal. You've got the assassination of Dr. Tiller. You've got the attack summer before last on the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation.
Don't forget the Nebraska DNC chair.
That was Arkansas. You've got the batshit crazy guy in Pittsburgh that was referenced earlier by Gareth. You've got this guy. You've got a woman in Washington a couple of nights ago shouting to a cheering crowd that she seeks to hang, you know, as in by the neck till dead, Senator Patty Murray. And there are little blips on this continuum along the way that include pictures of Barack Obama as Chairman Mao. The very concept of take our country back, because, you know, any country that has a black president, that has a man in the White House who was actively voted in almost as a block by black America, can't possibly be our country anymore, because it isn't the illusion of the white country with which they absolutely have to prop up their hate, their bigotry, their racism, their prejudice, their fascism.
That's quite a co-option of the hijacking of the very kind of slogans we progressives were talking about prior to the election.
Yeah, it is. And what the right wing recognized, Grant, was that what we were doing back during the Bush years was really, really good slogan work. It was really good messaging. It was really good imaging. The only thing our side lacked was the means to spread it. So the right wing looked up and said, hey, we've got the means. We own the broadcast for-profit media in this country. We own the radio. We own the television. We own the newspapers. we got a black guy in the White House and we can make this stick. And ultimately, somewhere along the way, they are what their secret hope and dream is that somebody will take a shot at Barack Obama and hopefully hit. Grant, I'm as convinced as I am that the sun will rise in the morning, that that is what these teabaggers want.
I think that's what the Koch brothers want.
Among others. They want this. They want to they want to send, yeah, and they do this. Send a message to Washington. Do you know who the first man to run on the concept of send a message to Washington was?
No.
George Wallace.
Oh, God. Every dusty tool sees it the light of day again, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Uh-huh.
And the thing is, Grant, they've been keeping them oiled. There ain't no rust on them.
Well, that's the thing. I guess they're only shiny and new because we're fucking amnesiatic as a population. I guess.
Yeah.
But what says it all, man? TV, the purpose, it gets you to forget.
And I'm being reminded by David in South Carolina that this line, this continuum you and I are discussing. David in South Carolina is reminding me that also a blip on this little continuum. These bastards show up at town hall meetings with sidearms. They are marching into Starbucks in California with guns strapped on. More than half, a survey recently took place. A couple of them. In one, 88% of America didn't realize their taxes had been cut under Barack Obama. In another survey that came out in the last day or so, more than half of all citizens of the state of Texas believe that human beings coexisted with dinosaurs. Now that's some sobering stuff.
I'm not sure if they're ever going to wake up from this cult.
They're not.
It's pretty self-sealing. It's well-sponsored. That's what I fear the most. I mean, you got Texas basically giving us Halliburton fucking history books now.
Yeah.
It's going to be like Idiocracy in the Time Machine ride.
That's why I keep saying that Idiocracy was not a movie about the future. It had to be written that way, but it is actually a movie very much about our present.
Indeed. Absolutely. I cast the name Jesus to any false equivalent, and it seems to register. And it's like pulling teeth out of a chicken to get it out of their head. It's amazing. I mean, just like most twisted forms, like Mengele and, his behavioralist program or something. And this is why I'm afraid they're never going to really wake up from this cult thing they're into. And that's all I see it as. It's just another stinking power cult.
And by the way, you're going to love this, Grant.
What?
The guy that just got elected to the Senate from Massachusetts, Scott Brown. The guy that posed nude in Playgirl?
Must have missed it.
Cosmo. That guy. He was asked about the attack in Austin today. You know what his response was?
What?
Well, everyone hates taxes.
Oh, that's cute. That's cute. I'm right on that edge, man. You know, I have to talk myself down quite a bit. Sometimes I just want to go all the way over the top with Malloy and say, you know what?
Screw it.
Let them deep six the damn republic. Keep a copy of the Constitution yourself. Live it. And take no crap from no bullies. Okay? And someday, when they're buried, somebody with a copy of what we preserved might actually populate the Congress. I'm coming up with
you know
that.
What, and I hope you know, and I think you do, how much I respect and feel profound fondness for Mike, but I disagree with him on this. And not substantively. That day will never come when they will dig up our Constitution and say, let's try this again. Because there will always be some guy standing there saying, you know, abortion ain't in the Constitution. Or, looky right there in the Constitution says I've got a right to have a Sherman tank in my front yard. See there, right there, Second Amendment.
I think it's actually going to be worse than that. I think it's always going to be 2 + 2 = 5 because we say so or else. That's what I think is really going to be the standard. It's getting there. They're ginning themselves up. They're getting the courage to just, they're right because they have might. They're just working their echo chamber like a little self-referential dynamo. And that's where I think the Cold War is going hot. I got news for any chuckleheads out there on the right wing. This liberal shoots back.
Yeah, I'm
shooting liberals in my town. That's the kind of thing where I throw down. It's like, I want to go nuts on these people because I know where this goes. And I'm just holding back on the line.
Yeah, but Grant, I'm sorry.
Just wondering when it's going to happen.
But you and I both know that violence is not the answer.
I don't know what else to do sometimes. It gets pretty visceral, man.
Oh, I know it does. Hey, I'm a well-armed liberal. I got me some guns. But unlike this fool who set fire to his house with his wife and child in it before he went and got in the airplane, I know that I've got greater responsibilities. And I also know that while the government will not say that this guy was a domestic terrorist, if you were to do something like that, or I would, it would be all over. Angry liberal shoots up town.
That's just another case of liberal intolerance. You see what I was telling you? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. You can predict the spin before it ever hits. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like wearing this purple robe with the frayed sleeves and the moons and the half fallen off moons and stars all over it. But it ain't much magic to predict what it's going to be.
Doesn't even take much to parlor trick, indeed.
It ain't much trick.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm being reminded by Matt Osborne of OsborneInc.com that he recently published a post called "I Want to Shoot Glenn Beck in the Head."
What would Jesus do?
Now, the folks at Huffington Post didn't take too kindly to it.
Yeah, I imagine.
But, yeah. And he went on to say, with a hypo grenade of haloperidol. Yeah. Just chase all the bad voices right out of his head.
Well, why don't you take them home, huh?
Yeah, no kidding. Can I get that in to-go box?
What's that?
Can I get that in a to-go box?
Sure.
Grant, take care, brother.
Take care, man. Thanks for talking me down.
All right, later. Bye now. Calling from Oregon, that's our buddy Grant, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's George from Denver.
Well, hey, George, how are you?
I'm your truther.
You're welcome to be one.
Really? Hey, so you know I believe 9/11 was an inside job.
Right.
And, I believe the same people who did 9/11 did JFK. Did you know that Richard Nixon, that he stood up in a congressional meeting once and he said, no, Jack Ruby can't testify because he works for me and it's a thing of national security that he can't testify. This was before they murdered Kennedy. Did you know that?
I had never read that.
That's true. And you'll find that was a coup d'etat. That right there, the Kennedy, they murdered Kennedy, and Johnson was their guy. And but anyway, when that happened, you no one has voted since then. This is all a big. They love this right left stuff, but I guarantee you, who runs the voting machines, Diebold and ES&S, and I think they bought each other. So now it's just one company. One corrupt company that counts our votes? Am I wrong?
I think Diebold and ES&S are separate, but Sequoia got bought out by someone.
That was quite a while ago. I think just recently, these other two big corrupt companies bought each other, and Now it's like they have 80%. Didn't matter if they bought each other or not. It's the same thing. It's one big corrupt corporation.
But George, you do mention one thing with which I take issue. Something I see very frequently on right-wing sites is the reference to the false left-right paradigm. And I couldn't disagree with that more strenuously. It is not a false paradigm. Maybe corporate Democrat versus corporate Republican is a false paradigm. Left versus right is not. First of all...
I'd agree with you.
Let me flesh this out just a little bit. First of all, you would have to have a viable left in this country for there to be a left-right paradigm. There's no viable left in this country.
It's a joke.
You know, there's no active communist, there's no meaningful communist party in this country. There's some websites, and there are some people who call themselves communists. The Socialist Workers Party puts out a brilliant newspaper, but there's no socialist movement in this country. The only thing that gets passed off as the left in this country is what is defined by the extreme right wing as being left. The kind of liberal that I am, Dwight Eisenhower, well, okay. But, you know, that man would be a center-left kind of guy if he was president today. He wouldn't be allowed to be a Republican because he's not ideologically pure enough for the teabaggers. This guy that flew the plane into the building today in Austin was clearly a right-winger. It's all there inside his screed if you will just... And this isn't a matter of playing Beatles albums backwards. It's written right there in front of your face, not yours, but ours, if we will only take time to read it closely. It's called textual criticism. And it's all there. And I've tried to spend two hours and 50 minutes laying out what's there for anybody who can see it. The references to Catholics, blacks, Jews, all the LaRoucher tax business. None of this stuff is stuff that even would even be remotely recognizable in anything considered to be, quote-unquote, the left. They're not our issues. This guy had a posting, I'm sure it's been down the memory hole now, but this guy had a posting at the New York Times in which he went off on unions. No lefty would do that. This guy was who he was.
I've been in a union all my life.
Yeah.
All my working life, and they're corrupt. I'm in a union right now.
All institutions have a degree of corruption.
Okay.
As the Huey Long character known as Willie Stark in Robert Penn Warren's masterpiece, All the King's Men says, man is conceived in sin and dieth in corruption. There is always something, from the stink of the deity to the stench of the grave, there is always something. Human institutions are going to be corrupt because human beings are themselves corrupt or corruptible. Now, that's not me buying into some idea of original sin. It's just the kind of hairless monkeys we are.
My point right there is they took over our government in 63, probably way before that. But in 63, I guarantee you, they took it over. In fact, look into that thing about Nixon. I mean, wouldn't that worry you? If Ruby worked for Nixon way before Kennedy got murdered, and that Nixon stood up in a congressional meeting and said Ruby can't testify,
that would be interesting. That would be very interesting.
Well, you should look into that. That's a true thing. You know, I've voted Democrat for 35 years. Always a Democrat. Nothing but Democrat. Always. 35 years until the last election. And then I voted for the head of the Green Party, which was Cynthia McKinney.
And you know what? That was a heroic vote. I have not a problem in the world with Cynthia McKinney. She is a hero to me.
She wanted a new investigation into 9/11 and a new investigation into JFK.
Let me get on the record real, real clear here. I'm not opposed to a new investigation of 9/11 because the first one was a dummy job. Now, I don't believe that it was a planned demolition, and again, I recognize the danger of using the word believe, because it is the opposite and mortal enemy of the word know. But I don't believe it was a planned demolition. I don't believe that the aircraft was an Exocet missile or anything else, the stuff that I've seen posited.
The building's turned into talcum powder.
But what I do know, and this is how I live my life, George, what I do know is that the investigation itself was a sham and a mockery. Anytime that the President of the United States can't speak to a commission and can't speak to it under oath and can only speak to it if he is sitting on the ventriloquist's lap. Remember, he had to testify in with Dick Cheney present with him.
Why can't we see the tapes, the 80 cameras that the FBI confiscated at the Pentagon, and they only showed us 4 frames? Why can't we see any more than that?
You know what? I want to see them. I want to see them. I absolutely insist on seeing them.
If you were to see 5 frames, you would realize it was an inside job. They showed us all the frames they could show. You know what? The Pentagon is the most protected building on the planet. It's got these guns. These, I don't know what you call them, but they pop up out of the ground. I saw a simulation of them. They pop up out of the ground and point to the target in like hundredths of a second. Where were they? You know, no, it's a big lie, 9/11 is. You know, Google 9/11 coincidences, Bob. I would love for you to just check that out.
I have. George, I have.
Okay, but there's another one. This is the one, and this is the main reason I called tonight, because I told you many months ago I wanted to call and tell you this. But the Oklahoma City bombing. Okay, I was hearing things about it, and finally I went and looked. I was hearing everybody in Oklahoma City knew that it was an inside job. So I would like to give you a line here, and if you type this into Google, it'll take you and show you something. And it's op-ed news, Oklahoma City bombing, what the mainstream news left out. Not mainstream media, or you won't get there. It's mainstream news left out. But if you Google that, what that'll do is it'll show you the news coverage of that day in Oklahoma City, the local news. But they were ABC, NBC, CBS. It was their news. And all day they were saying 2 bombs had gone off. The bomb squad just dismantled the 3rd bomb. They're working on the 4th bomb, and the bomb truck's backing up right now to pick it up. And you're watching the bomb truck back up to this blown-up building. And then she says, oh, the bomb squad guys, we were so lucky. They just happened to be right in the area when this happened. Okay, and she said, and they also said that we were really lucky because the 3rd and 4th bombs were so much bigger than the first 2. And this goes on and on and on. And if you go to this website, op-ed news, Oklahoma City bombing, what the mainstream news left out, you will see the mainstream media telling you over and over, nothing about a Ryder truck. And, you know, I've seen from a helicopter, I've looked down onto the street and all the rubble laying out there. I don't see any hole in the street. Now, later they put plywood there to make you think there was a hole in the street. But those 4 bombs were inside the building, and this is from the local news, all the top, you know, ABC, NBC. So I challenge you to go look at that. Don't go look at 9/11 or but look at Oklahoma City and just see if what the mainstream media was telling you. By 5 o'clock that night, they changed it. It was a Timothy McVeigh thing. It's a real eye-opener.
Well, I will go and have a look. I will go and have a look. But right now, George, I got to roll.
I know you do. Okay, thanks.
Fresh out of time. Indeed. Have a good evening. Bye now.
Keith, too. Bye.
Like I said, I'm not real crazy about doing mono shows or monotopic shows. But I think this was warranted. I really do. I think this was warranted. I sit here night after night after night after night, and I say, the right wing means you no good. They actively mean you ill. And I don't couple that by saying, go out and bust a cap in a wing nut. I don't, and I never will. But for the love of God, for the love of Christ, for the love of anything that you hold holy,
Keep your eyes open. Look for this stuff. I'm a lonesome little guy on the internet who has just laid out a compelling case over the course of 3 hours for why this guy was a wingnut and how deadly the right wing is in this country and what Grant calls the hot war that they have started against you and me. Us, we, the people, in order to form a more perfect union, achieve what? Tranquility! They are the most untranquil bastards on the planet. And until we find the motivation to render them voiceless and render them powerless, and we can only do that by our combined peaceful efforts, they will continue to wage their hot war on us. I suppose Mr. Stack is happy in hell now because he did manage to kill someone. I'll lay odds that it was someone who had nothing to do with the FBI, with the IRS. Probably somebody struggling to make a living cleaning, dumping garbage cans. Or maybe a maintenance guy who was fixing a wall socket. And he died because a LaRouche tax-dodging IRS-hating wingnut declared he had had enough. If you want people to know what happened today in Austin, direct them to the archive of this show. Because this son of a bitch was a wingnut bastard. And he was a part of all that is wrong with this country. And by God, even though he was white, he was a terrorist. Don't ever refer to this man as crazy or insane or deluded. Refer to this man as what he was. Another typical right winger. So that's the program for tonight, and I thank you. I thank you for your comments, for your patience, for your ears. I thank you for everything. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch. You know, the motto of the White Rose Society at whiterosesociety.org is fighting the rise of the new fascism. That's what we're talking about here. Thank you to all of those of you who contribute. Thank you, especially after last night. Thank you for getting us closer, significantly closer. And you know who you are. Significantly closer to meeting our February goal. Thank you for being part of this process. Thank you to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sue, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, who did real yeoman work today trying to find out this guy's voter registration, only to find out that he'd never registered to vote in Texas. That was great work, Betsy. Thanks to our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com. Thanks to head writer, David in Tennessee. Thanks, Ferg, for hanging out with me.
You're welcome.
Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks
at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They prove it every day. They face people as violent and as hate-filled as the man who flew that plane into that building in Texas today, because there's not a lot of difference between him and your average coal thug. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Hey, welcome to the program, this Thursday evening edition. I didn't think I was going to be here, but I am. I'm here. Let the bells ring out and the banners fly. It's too good to be true, but I'm here. You hold a, three cheers and a tiger for me. It's a minute and a half past the hour. I'm Bob. This is the Horn. And this is the Thursday night program. And I guess there's nowhere to start but where we kind of have to start. And you know what that is. What shall we call it? The domestic terrorism that no one will dare call domestic terrorism? I mean, it wasn't any time. The building was still on fire when the federal government was issuing statements. This is not an act of terrorism. I'm telling you, this is not an act of terrorism. And why not? Well, a white guy's involved. Couldn't possibly be terrorism. It's a white guy, not a Muslim. Only Muslims whose countries sit on top of our oil do terrorism. Right-wing, anti-tax, union-hating the screed writers. Why, that couldn't possibly be a terrorist, even if he is flying a plane into a building. Nah, that's not a terrorist. That's a disgruntled engineer. Somebody explain me something, please. And that's this. All the reporting, and I've tried to follow as much of it as I possibly could today, indicates, and if you go and read his manifesto, you'll see him talking about, I spent my retirement down to zero, and I've been broken on the rack of the government. Yeah, Jesus, why couldn't this guy just get drunk and sit at the end of the bar and mind his own business? My hope is to wake the American zombies up.